93.3 WMMR, Audio on Demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast. And now, Preston and Steve's news update with Kathy Romano.
Today is Monday, April 30th. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning. In the news this morning, a man serving life in prison for the 1981 murder of a Philadelphia police officer is expected to appear in court today. Mumia Abu-Jamal has petitioned the district attorney's office to vacate his previous failed attempts at appeals, which would allow him to reappeal his case. Maureen Faulkner told ABC she wants Philadelphia DA Larry Kressner and his team to remember the pain that she's endured for more than 30 years. She is back in Philadelphia again for the court hearing for the man who was found guilty of shooting and killing her husband almost 37 years ago. Faulkner says reliving those moments never get easy. Abu-Jamal has always maintained his innocence. His legal team thinks that they may have found a new way for an appeal after all these years. The legal team is petitioning under the Post-Conviction Relief Act, arguing his rights were violated when trying to appeal the case numerous times because of state Supreme Court Justice Ronald Castile. Castile was the former Philadelphia DA, and as a prosecutor, he prevailed in getting the state Supreme Court to uphold Abu-Jamal's conviction. The defense will likely argue when Castile became a state Supreme Court justice, he showed bias towards him, denying his legal challenges made in numerous appeal attempts. If Abu-Jamal's team is successful during the hearing today, his right to appeal again will be reinstated. That is something that Faulkner says that she has feared might happen for decades. Mumia Abu-Jamal murdered my husband, so what they're doing now is trying to find technicalities to get him out of prison 37 years later. I will continue to fight until my death to keep this man behind bars, Faulkner said. Abu-Jamal has previously been sentenced to death, but since then, his charge, it has changed to life in prison without parole. So the hearing will be held in Center City today.
She's a wonderful woman, Maureen Faulkner, and even though she's moved on, you know, in other aspects of her life, it's as if the murder took place just yesterday.
Yeah.
And she's as vigilant as ever, you know, in her cause. It's an amazing thing to see after all these years.
Today is the final day that SEPTA will be selling tokens at authority-operated locations. If you still have tokens, you will be able to use them until your supply runs out. But SEPTA is replacing the tokens with a key card, which is reloadable. You can get the key card for free until Friday. After that, the card will cost $4.95. SEPTA says it's just like using the tokens without having all the heavy metal in your pockets or your purse. The SEPTA key is reloadable, reusable, and replaceable if lost. Tokens will continue to be sold in bulk to social service agencies beyond April 30th.
Kathy, can I trade in my POGs as well, or no?
No. Third-party retailers will also continue to sell tokens to the general public beyond Monday. For more information, you can go to iSEPTAPhilly.com/key. A $12 million restoration project on Lincoln Drive is expected to begin today. The project includes day and night work between Ridge and Wayne Avenues, improvements including resurfacing, guardrail, and medium replacement, and drainage improvements. The project will also include traffic improvements, such as traffic signals, mast arms, and poles at all five signalized intersections along this section of Lincoln Drive and at the intersection of Rittenhouse Street and Wissahickon Avenue. The Philadelphia Water Department will also replace a storm water sewer at Harvey Street as part of the project. Officials say the work is planned between 6 a.m. and 9 p.m. with they're saying it will have minimal impact on traffic, but residents are saying, yeah, not so much.
It's around rush hour. It's used as a main conduit. You know,
yeah.
I come in on it early. And so I convert two lanes to one lane when I drive Lincoln because it's you're doing the slalom with the potholes. I was telling Preston saw a car with a front right tire. They hit a pothole and the tire assembly had cracked and the tire was sticking up sideways.
That's it's insane. Pretty bad.
Hey, Kath, you said 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. Did you mean 9 p.m. to 6 a.m.?
No, 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. They said that it'll be reduced to one lane, but then there'll also be work from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. with full road closure. So I don't know.
Oh, my God.
It's actually easier for me because I'll just at the point at which we're starting the work, I'll just come in the way I used to come in from when I lived in Manion.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. So there will be no closures during the morning and evening rush hours, but they will have the roadway reduced to one lane. Construction is expected to be completed by the end of 2019.
You know, the way things cost, does that seem like enough to fix that?
$12
million? Bombed out, decimated piece of crap?
Yeah.
It is being funded with 80% federal and 20% city funds. All right, in sports this morning.
Sacks are yummy.
Ronald Acuna Jr. doubled twice and reached base four times as the Atlanta Braves cruised to a 10-1 win over the Phillies yesterday afternoon at the ballpark.
Oh, no!
Yeah. Ozzy Albiez hit the game's first pitch for a home run, added a two-run double, and scored three runs for the Braves, who improved to 6-3 over the Phils this season. The Phils begin a six-game road trip tonight with a matchup in South Florida against the Miami Marlins. Jake Arrieta gets the start, and game time is at 7:10. The Sixers finally know who they'll be playing in the second round of the NBA playoffs as the Celtics beat the Milwaukee Bucks on Saturday night in Game 7 in Boston. The second round begins tonight, and games 1 and 2 will be in Boston, who are playing without starters Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving. Jaylen Brown is also doubtful for Game 1 because he still has soreness after leaving Game 7 with a hamstring injury. Tip-off at the Garden is set for 8 o'clock. In another Game 7, LeBron James led the Cavaliers to a 105-101 win over the Indiana Pacers yesterday afternoon in Cleveland. James had 45 points and added 9 rebounds and 7 assists while improving to 13-0 in the first round. The Cavs will play the top-seeded Raptors in Round 2, and Game 1 is tomorrow night in Toronto. In the NHL playoffs, Alex Ovechkin scored his 7th goal of the playoffs. Braden Holtby made 32 saves, and the Washington Capitals held on to beat the Pittsburgh Penguins 4-1 in Game 2 to even the second round series at one game apiece. And the Eagles are still the Super Bowl champs.
Yay!
And that's what I have for you this morning.
All right, thank you very much, Kathy. Welcome back from the weekend, everyone. As I said, we got warmer temperatures this week. That's going to be great. And we are now officially, it's in the books, we're 50 years old.
Yes!
It happened yesterday, and celebrating the official. And I was listening to Pierre. It was after 7, and
he was still on going.
He went on at 10 a.m.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It was pretty wild. I was checking in and out. It was some wonderful listening.
Yeah, I actually came by here yesterday.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I missed you. What time were you here?
Popped on the air. It was around noonish.
Okay.
Somewhere around
I got to
then,
hear it.
11:30 or noon. Yeah.
It was great. I was listening time, and it was really cool to hear you come in. You had the walk yesterday morning and then came here after that.
Yeah, yeah. So popped in, and Pierre was just, he was like a kid in a candy store. He was loving it. He was so happy.
Holding court, and the people coming in and out as you check in, it was wonderful. It happened on a Sunday, but it was wonderful.
It was about 11 hours total.
Oh, yeah. My
wow.
God.
That he was on air, yeah.
That's crazy.
Isn't that great?
That is a long shift. For those who don't know, doing radio after 5 hours, you're wiped out. And it's not physical, digging ditches work, but you are using a lot of emotion, and you're obviously talking for a long amount of time. And it's for a broadcast like that. He must have been wiped out, but he was loving it.
Well, he's bought himself a whole bunch of showing up late, so it's okay.
Yeah, totally. So it was very cool and very special, and I was really excited listening to it and hearing all the stories of things over the years here at MMR.
It's cool that you got to get in and talk about the whole day, because it is, it's a massive thing to be a part of, and we're thrilled.
Yeah, We are the longest standing rock radio station in the entire country as far as still being current rock music based. And it's huge.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
It is.
It was very cool. And so happy birthday to MMR. And with that, we have a 50th birthday prize pack for you to win for the Word of the Week prize. So that means you can get yourself some tickets to the MMRBQ 2018. Free admission to MMR's Mudder's Day. 4-pack of tickets for Pierre Presents Nathaniel Rateliff and the Night Sweats, a 4-pack of tickets to the MMR Birthday Beer Bash, and $100 to spend in the MMR Rock Shop.
Whoa.
So we got all this good stuff to give away to one lucky person. Just keep track of our word this week, which, of course, the letter comes at the end of the program, and then Friday we'll have a 5-lettered word.
This 93.3 WMMR Audio On Demand program returns after a brief word from our sponsors.
This Mother's Day, brighten Mom's Day with a Hand and Stone Massage and Facial Spa gift card. Visit handandstone.com or one of their over 50 locations in Delaware, South Jersey, Philadelphia, including the Lehigh Valley.
Celebrate all the sweet loves in your life with Stephen's brand new Sweet Love 24-karat gold dip rose for just $59. It's a beautiful lavender rose that reminds your sweet love just how much they mean to you. Don't miss out. Get yours now at IHateStevenSinger.com.
This is the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
The greatest woman that ever lived has a birthday today. Gal Gadot.
Oh, yes.
Wonder Woman is 33 years old today. We have the Wonder Woman thing. Can you pull that up on the...
That one.
Yeah.
We need to get the actual movie one, too, because that gives me wood.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
We've got it. That's what I'm referring to.
Right.
But she is... There's, what is there to not love about her?
Do you know what it is? There's obviously great physical beauty and there's great sexiness. However, she is just seems to be a wonderfully sweet, good person, good with the fans.
Yes.
That smile.
Yes.
That fun, that the outtakes with Chris Pine from the from the original film doesn't take herself too seriously.
Agreed.
Ah!
She's just amazing. I love everything about that woman. And you know what? And it goes back to the first film with where she pops up Batman v Superman.
Yeah.
And she's at the party in the dress, and I'm like, who is that? And then she gets in the fight scene at the end of the movie. You're like, oh, my God.
When she,
she's freaking awesome.
Also because she's enjoying it.
Yes.
When she gets knocked back, and she's the look on her face, why, you son of a bitch.
She smiles.
She's every bit they're equal and superior to Batman.
She likes a fight. So, and you know what? She's funny. She's been in some pretty funny movies as well.
That dumb movie with the Keeping Up with the Joneses.
Keeping Up with the Joneses.
I watched it.
It has its moments.
I enjoyed it.
And comedically, she pulls it off. So, Gal Gadot. Stunning and 33 years old today.
You mentioned Crossing the Streams, Preston. There's a little chunk of the Deadpool trailer where he's out of his Deadpool costume, and Cable apparently is beating on him, and he goes, man, you're dark, like a DC villain.
Yeah, exactly. It's great. So happy 33rd to Gal Gadot. It is Kirsten Dunst's birthday today as well. She's had her time in the Marvel Universe with the Spider-Man movies. And she is 36 years old today. Yeah, she played MJ.
Yes, she did. Mm-hmm. Classic inverted kiss.
Yeah. It's also the great Willie Nelson's birthday today. Yes. He is in the country singer-songwriter Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And he's in the marijuana smoking Hall of Fame as well. That dude loves his weed.
Not only he loves his weed, he's a complete aficionado. He is also like a multiple black belt. I forget in what discipline.
Get out of here.
Nick, do a checkup on
him. In Taekwondo.
Yeah, but it's he's really legitimate.
You can go home now.
Yeah,
you got it.
Casey, you got it.
Yeah.
Taekwondo.
I saw him last year. They did this Outlaw Music Fest, and it was a really great show. Nathaniel Rateliff was on it, and Sheryl Crow, and Willie's the headliner, and it's his tour, and it's just, if you ever get a chance to go see him, I highly recommend it. They're back in town. They're across the river in Camden on September 15th this year. And it's Van Morrison, Willie Nelson, Tedeschi Trucks, and a whole bunch of others.
Love to get his ass in here.
They're going to be playing Hershey Park as well September 8th. Yeah, Nick, look up what discipline he is a martial arts
And he's 80?
Master.
Yes.
He's 85.
Wow. Oh, my God.
He is 85 years old today.
I got to start smoking pot.
It was really, man, we almost had him in the studio. He was coming in town for something, and it fell apart at the last minute. I was really bummed out because I want to meet that guy. He's got a great voice. He's one of those people that just has a beautiful voice.
Great voice, great songwriter, songwriting capabilities. And if you look at him in his earlier footage, Preston, he's all sort of buttoned down and completely different than the Willie Nelson we now know.
Nick, what's the Eddie Vedder song that he does a cover of?
Oh, Just Breathe.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. So happy 85th birthday to Willie Nelson. Burt Young, Paulie from the Rocky movies, is celebrating his 70th birthday today.
The spoiler alert, he dies in the Rocky movies. I thought that Burt Young died as well.
No.
No. Wait, he dies in... Oh, yeah. Does he?
In Creed, he's dead.
In Creed? Okay. Yeah. 78 years old today.
That guy was so stupid.
Yeah.
I only know him from that and Back to School. Has he been in anything else?
He's done a fair amount of stage stuff, Casey. Okay. He's really the stage is his passion, but actually a pretty smart guy.
I want to say that he was in the Pope of Greenwich Village as well. Was he the main?
You might be right.
Mafia guy.
Yeah.
Before they cut off his thumb, I think they're like, we're gonna go over this a few times.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think that was Burt Young. I may be off on that, but anyhow, he is 78 years
old.
He's
also the love interest in The Runaway Bride, Preston.
I missed that.
Oh no, wait, that's Richard Gere. I'm sorry.
Cloris Leachman has her birthday today. She's had her time with Mel Brooks in Young Frankenstein.
Brilliant.
Frau Blücher in that. And she was also in History of the World, I believe. She's been in a few.
She was in High Anxiety. She was the dominatrix nurse that had the closet.
Man, do they ugly her up for some roles.
Oh,
it's
they make
hilarious.
Her look horrible.
Yeah.
The sequence in Young Frankenstein when she's, would you like some more milk?
Yeah.
Some Ovaltine?
What? By the way, she's 92.
I think I say it every time her birthday rolls around, because I implore you, if you've never seen the movie The Last Picture Show.
Yeah.
You got to see it. Her performance in it, she won an Oscar for it. Unbelievable.
Then you have Johnny Galecki celebrating his birthday as well. Big Bang Theory, Leonard on that show.
Roseanne.
And Roseanne, he's going back on that. Right?
Yeah, yeah. I think he has. I think he's going to make appearance. Yeah.
So he's 43 today. And then the last birthday I saw is Diana Agron. Who
sounds
is
familiar.
From Glee and I Am Number 4.
Oh, I Am Number 4, Preston, the Oscar-winning movie about alien teenagers.
Yeah. So she is.
After seeing that movie, I became number 2.
She is 32 today. All right, those are your birthdays. Let's see if we can get an answer to the stupid question. In the Marvel Cinematic Universe, what does S.H.I.E.L.D. stand for? 215-263-WMMR, and I will go to Joe. See if we can get this right. Hey, Joe, how you doing?
How's it going, guys?
Good, man. Joe, what is the answer, sir?
Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Yes.
Yay!
Absolutely correct. Hang on the line. We're going to get your information, and we are going to give you a $100 cash card from Sergeant Scrap, the Delaware Valley's original mobile scrap metal service company. Don't take crap for your scrap. Get the highest price paid on insulated wire. Guaranteed, SGT-scrap.com.
It's a man without my bells there, Preston. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I was wondering where you were going.
Steve, to answer your question, Willie Nelson is a fifth-degree black belt in the martial art, and forgive me if I pronounce this incorrectly, Gong Kwan Yu Sul. And I've never heard of that before, but that's the martial art that he practices.
That's right. That's where you use the three-foot-long bong as a weapon.
It's a weapons-based self-defense.
Hey, by the way, so in the comics, S.H.I.E.L.D. stood for Supreme Headquarters International Espionage Law Enforcement Division.
I think the movie version's better.
They went with something a little bit different in the movie. All right, let's get into some of the entertainment stories. We'll start with Bill Cosby. The news that he was found guilty on all three counts of aggravated indecent assault Thursday was considered a big win for the Me Too movement, which aims to champion women whose accusations of sexual misconduct have been silenced and dismissed. In the days following the news, many of his victims spoke out, as observers were left wondering what's next for the disgraced 80-year-old comedian. Jenise Dickinson was one of the most vocal. In an interview with the Daily Mail, she said, I've been holding on to this since 1982, and it's slowly seeping out of me. The toxicity levels of emotion and catastrophic pain and nightmares for so very many years, I just bounced out of bed and I was like, wow. She, of course, accused Cosby's legal team of slut-shaming her, too.
Huh.
She said, I was just mad inside, but I did not want Tom Mesereau, who was Cosby's attorney, to see that he could get underneath my skin. She said, I didn't want Cosby to see me face-to-face. I was kind of hiding behind a board that was barricading his view of me. I didn't want him to see how confident I am, how beautiful I am, and how that truly I've grown from a young girl into a fierce, devoted mom and a loyal woman to all women's causes.
Her in particular this is an interesting story because she's always been, even she's on that Surreal House series, she was effed up. I mean, she had all these things. She seemed like she had some really good attributes, but she couldn't get to the core of whatever was bothering her. And then now you put it in the context of this.
Yeah.
And you could see where that was festering and effing up her life.
Yeah. So she said, so when I saw him out of the corner of my eye, I had a feeling of disgust enveloping me, to be honest. He deserves, and listen, as she said, he deserves every bit of 30 years and more. I hope he rots in hell.
Wow.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So she's forgiven him.
She's forgiven him. Before sentencing, Cosby was ordered to undergo a sexually violent predator assessment and placed under house arrest. And he's also required to wear a GPS monitor and stay within a 5-county area. Each count of the 3 counts he was convicted of carries up to 10 years in prison, but observers say he may serve the teams concurrently.
In addition to the GPS tracker, Preston, for some reason they have him wearing a windsock, which I don't understand.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah, it is kind of weird.
Prison life will be a big change for Cosby, whose net worth was estimated by Forbes to be around $400 million in 2016.
What?
He owns several homes, a fortune's worth of artwork and luxury cars. He would be one of 83 inmates aged 80 or older at the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections.
It's kind of a special club.
And one of just a few who is legally blind. He would be permitted to send and receive monitor emails and would be assigned a sighted inmate who would likely be paid 19 to 42 cents an hour to help lead him around the facility.
42 wow. cents an hour? Sweet.
And he is appealing his conviction. Meanwhile, Cosby is reportedly mentally preparing himself for prison and supposedly told Page Six, but there's some contention as to whether or not he did this interview or not, but supposedly he told Page Six that he is doing so by thinking about what the foreign political prisoner Nelson Mandela endured in South African prisons.
Mm-hmm.
He supposedly said, but, you know, I think back of the time when Camille and I went to visit Nelson Mandela in South Africa. He was a free man, but I remember when we met him at Robben Island, where he had been in prison for all those years. I sat in that cell where he lived, and I saw how he lived, what he had to eat to live, and what he went through. So if they send me to that place, then that's what they will do, and I will have to go there.
His conditions will be decidedly better than that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
In a separate interview with ABC, Cosby's spokesman, Andrew Wyatt, claimed that Cosby never gave an interview to the paper. He said he never did that. That's totally false. He never gave Page Six an interview. So I don't know if it's legit or not.
What he did say, he's going to watch that Will Ferrell, Kevin Hart movie, Get Hard.
Oh, Get Hard. Yeah,
yeah. yeah.
That's good.
Train him how to get in prison.
Get ready for prison life. Probably a good idea. No secret that the Kardashian-Jenner clan is tight. And when one of their crew is wronged, they close ranks. When video footage of Tristan Thompson apparently cheating on his very pregnant girlfriend, Khloe, surfaced, the internet was outraged. But amid the anger directed to Thompson, many wondered how are Khloe's sisters and mom reacting.
That's what I was wondering.
Behind closed doors. Well, now it seems.
How's Kris Jenner?
We have some answers because there's a teaser clip for the Ellen DeGeneres show and Kim is on it.
I watched it.
And she says, now it seems we have our answer. Or no, she says, I don't even know how to describe it besides it's just so effed up. We really were rooting for Khloe, and we still are. She's so strong, and she's doing the best that she can.
Ellen is so likable that she just kind of, so Khloe, you know, brings that up in the interview, and she doesn't demur from it, which is, I think they want to kill this guy.
So Khloe welcomed daughter True a few weeks ago. And Thompson reportedly attended the birth along with several Kardashians, which, of course, is awkward. So Kim told DeGeneres, it's just really a sad situation all over. I made this rule with my brother. If there's a baby.
You know, the big dummy.
If there's a baby involved, I'm not going to say anything so negative because one day True is going to see this. And she was referring to her brother Rob's saga with his ex, Black Chyna, and they share their daughter Dream together.
Man, as a family, they can sure pick some stinkers, can't they? Oh, my God.
And have a kid with somebody.
Like, out of the gate.
Who is just not going to be a part of the family at all.
And Kylie with this rapper. I mean, listen, he may be the greatest dad of all time, but I'm thinking maybe not.
While Khloe hasn't addressed the scandal directly, she waxed philosophical recently on her app, writing, life is short, and at times we put so many others before us, but one of our priorities should be our own happiness.
Now buy some Kimojis.
Once you have that, it trickles down to everyone around us. I sincerely wish happiness and peace to my sisters.
Wow. That's pretty profound.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You know what I didn't lead with? Like a dumbass?
The movie.
I always on Monday lead with the box office take, and I'd moved it in my entertainment report.
I thought you were going to get to it in your own good time.
I have it here. Of course, Avengers Infinity War was number one and opened with $250 million, demolishing Disney's previous record set by Star Wars The Force Awakens, which had earned $247 million. So it beat it by just a couple of mil. Disney now holds 9 of the top 10 biggest openings in North American history.
It's just amazing.
Worldwide, Avengers Infinity War took in $630 million in one weekend.
It's more than likely going to finish up this run as the highest grossing movie of all time.
It's amazing. Wow. Infinity War.
This one definitely is a you want to see it again movie.
Oh, yeah. It also nabbed another record, earning the best Saturday ever with $83 million, 19% over the previous record holder set by Universal's Jurassic World. It earned $69.6 million on June 13th, 2015. And Chris Pratt was in that movie as well. Yep. So he's doing pretty well.
And I'm sure Black Panther's still in the top 10, right?
It is. It's at number 5. So second place was A Quiet Place. Third was I Feel Pretty, followed by Rampage, Black Panther, Super Troopers 2, Truth or Dare, Blockers. And number 9 was Ready Player One. And then Traffic rounded out the top 10.
I think Black Panther is going to be on DVD in like 2 weeks.
Yes.
Yeah. In 2 weeks.
Yes.
Yes.
Wow.
Two.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
I think what they're hoping for is that a lot of people will check it out and then be inspired to go see this movie.
Yeah.
So just, you know, like they're moving the bread around the plate now to get all the gravy.
Yeah. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I will go back and see it again before it finishes up running in the theater. Amy Schumer is recovering after 5 days in the hospital with a horrible kidney infection.
Ooh.
The I Feel Pretty star was hit with the infection in the midst of promoting her film. And she had wrote on Instagram, here's what I've been up to this week. I was hospitalized for 5 days with a horrible kidney infection. She said, I want to give a big thank you to the doctors, the badass nurses, also my husband, whose name is, I want to say Chris. And my sisters, Kimby and Maul, who have been by my side the whole time.
Kimby and Maul?
Yeah, that's what she wrote.
I don't know, probably shortened versions of longer names. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She added that her doctors forbid her from flying to London for the I Feel Pretty premiere. She said, I'm really disappointed, selfishly, to miss this trip because I love London and Europe in general and all the great people and food there. But I need to put my health first. During a trip to Paris, by the way, with her ex-boyfriend Ben Hanisch a few years ago, she landed in the hospital from food poisoning.
Ooh.
But she and her husband, Chris, just returned from their honeymoon. But she is illin' at this point. A little more than 14 years ago, Paris Hilton's infamous sex tape was leaked in a new documentary.
Yes.
The socialite opens up about the ramifications of tape of having sex with then-boyfriend Rick Solomon being seen by so many had on her life. She said it was like being raped.
Hmm.
She's now 37. She says in the film titled The American Meme, according to USA Today, it felt like I'd lost part of my soul and been talked about in such cruel and mean ways. I literally wanted to die at some points. I was like, I just don't want to live because I thought everything was taken away from me and I didn't want to be known as that, she says. So, but I mean, it was released without her permission.
That one was.
And the guy went behind her back and really.
Rick Solomon was the guy's name. We had the clip. Check it out. Check
so,
it
out. You know, I mean, it's a pretty strong statement saying it was like being raped, but in some sense, I can see why. I mean, look, this is her having full-on...
Yeah.
It's an intimate moment, yes.
And everybody saw it, and so that's a crazy violation.
And the rumor is, never verified, but that the with the Kim Kardashian video, that they actually were... When they realized it was going to happen, they negotiated, and Kris Jenner negotiated a deal for payment for that. Never verified, but that's always been the long-standing rumor.
Ben Affleck jumped on the social media trend of actors posting their first headshot online. Did you guys see this?
I saw a whole bunch of headshots, and I was finally figured out what the hell it was.
Yeah, it was like post your headshot day.
Yeah, yeah.
And so anybody in the acting or I have tons of headshots.
Yeah.
Acting or music careers always have headshots, even in the radio.
Some
of
them were funny, though.
Oh, they were great.
Some of the old ones were good.
I posted one of my old ones.
It's nice. It was
it's Garth.
The dark days of Knight Rider, right?
Yeah, it was Knight Rider's evil twin, Garth. Right. Yeah.
So anyhow, Ben Affleck did it with a bit of a twist. He actually posted a few of his buddy Matt Damon's most cringeworthy early shots. He wrote, "I know this is a day late, but Matt isn't on Instagram, so I thought I'd help him out."
Matt Damon.
The 45-year-old actor wrote alongside a trio of photos. In one, he gazes into the distance while straightening his tie. And in another, he poses shirtless while holding his shoulders. So I guess it's...
Oh, that's like a bad pose. You know? That's a... Oh, my gosh, I just got out of the shower.
Yeah, exactly. So...
Get me a towel quickly. You'll see my nipples.
I could... you know what? At my 50th birthday, my wife had put out a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Pictures. Some of my old headshots were in there. I would... Did you guys have any headshots?
Yes, I had a couple. Yeah. Actually, when I first started in comedy, my agent was also a photographer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like porn stuff. And so I did some of that. All my headshots were, you know, that I used for years were through him. I had a mustache back then. And
Kathy, I know you've had headshots.
I have some great headshots. But I didn't know what was going on until the end of this. And then I was like, okay, I guess I'm too late.
I was getting tired of it after a while.
It was funny. I saw
only the good ones I like. Burt Kreischer's was really good.
Burt Kreischer's was funny.
Some of them, though, were I could not figure out who they were.
Oh, really?
Oh, like, really?
And some of them, like Minnie Driver posted one that I had to work at, you know, a little bit. But, it's wild. Listen, it's a standard. You got to have headshots.
Oh, my God. Here's a picture of Bert Kreischer. That look, is that, what is that? That can't be a real
headshot.
No, I don't
think it's real. I think it's Bert being
Bert.
It's
him making a disgusting face when he was younger, so. All right, Glee star Lea Michele. Tying the knot with Zandi Reich.
Zandi Reich.
She shared the happy news on Instagram, writing...
Intergalactic Bandit, Preston.
Writing, yes, under a pic of a honking engagement ring.
Actually, and if you spin it, it actually honks.
I would never use the word honking in my own language.
Watch, it's... everyone. Oh, it's beautiful, and does it honk?
Yeah.
Of course. He's no cheapo. Lea, make your ring honk for everyone. Isn't that great?
Yeah, but then somebody comes in with a big one and
show
and
off.
Then it's a show off. So
that's our old time couple.
They're celebrating their 50th anniversary. Yes. Squeeze your ring, honey. Go ahead. Engagement.
Was she engaged to Corey Monteith?
I believe so.
They were, yeah.
Okay.
She
still has a tattoo of his initials or name.
So I'm glad she found happiness post-tragedy.
Yes. She was devastated. She was absolutely in love with that guy, and it crushed her.
I think she is a stunner, by
absolutely.
The way.
Very Michelle. Sexy.
Yes. Reich, by the way, president of clothing brand AYR, personally designed the 4-carat elongated radian cut ring Lior Ryushalmi and the Jewelers of Las Vegas.
I have no idea what any of that means. All I know either. Is the ring honks.
Yeah. What a honking engagement ring.
Who provided the honking mechanism? You mentioned the jewelers. But...
That was Lior Ryushalmi.
Okay.
Who was part of the whole honking mechanism in the ring.
Oh, all right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't know that it was within the ring.
Of course.
Yeah, in the ring.
You squeeze the ring.
Yeah, you guys are...
You have to squeeze. There are two diamonds on each side that you squeeze.
Yeah, no, you guys are really good at educating me. No.
They're the trigger diamonds. You got to know clarity, cut, and honk.
Oh. Right.
the four C's.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. On the Tonight Show, Jimmy Fallon, Alexis Bledel let slip that she and her sisterhood of the Traveling Pants cohorts, Blake Lively, America Ferrara, and Amber Tamblyn, have pitched a third installation of the popular franchise.
I'm sorry, by this time, those pants are stinking up a storm. Full of skid marks.
There have been rumors of Sisterhood's return for years, but this is the first time one of the stars has floated it.
Let it go.
And Alexis Bledel is on Handmaid's Tale.
Yes.
They just started season two. I watched the first two episodes. Oh, my God.
Is she good?
Oh, my God. And she's a bigger part of it. It is such a messed up show, man.
I love her.
Yeah, she's great.
Great eyes.
Let's see. Michelle Pfeiffer is joining Angelina Jolie and Elle Fanning in Disney's Maleficent sequel.
I love Maleficent. Are you a fan of the film?
Great movie.
I really think it's beautifully told.
Yeah.
I think that she, Angelina Jolie, does a phenomenal job.
Agreed. Pfeiffer will play a queen. Ed Skrein, or Skrein.
Her name is Ed Skrein?
No. This guy's joining the movie as well.
I'm playing Queen Ed Skrein.
The 2014 original grossed $758 million worldwide.
Well, it damn well deserved it.
A huge hit. An iconic TV producer died over the weekend. Paul Younger Witt.
Yes.
Passed away. He was 77 years old.
Tons of successful sitcoms.
Yeah, he had struggled with cancer. Huh. He was best known for his work on The Partridge Family, Soap, and The Golden Girls. But he also...
This is The Partridge Family.
No, it's not. This is Golden Girls. He also produced several films, including Dead Poets Society, Three Kings, and Insomnia.
Good movies.
And he's survived by his wife, TV writer Susan Harris, with whom he shares 5 children. So that's sad news to hear.
A lot of people have drawn the parallel, and I think it's valid that Three Kings is basically a sequel to The Partridge Family.
I've not heard that.
Just a...
I will have to go back and watch that.
Back and watch both.
Because I'm not sure that I see it on just now thinking about that. Let's see what I have. I got a couple more quick stories. Newly released video from Luann de Lesseps.
Who's that?
She's from Real Housewives of New York City.
Oh, that's why I don't know.
Me too. But she was arrested on Christmas Eve, and she was scrapping and threatening with police officers.
Oh, you're a scrapper, aren't you?
After an officer began trying to fasten her seatbelt in the back of the police car, she said, "Don't touch me. I'm going to kill you. I'll kill you. I will kill you."
Oh, right then. No.
So she was charged with disorderly intoxication.
In case you didn't get that the first time and you just started recording.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Battery of an officer as well, resisting arrest with violence and threatening a public servant. She declined a plea deal in February. So she's in, that's big trouble, man.
Listen, what a bunch of skanky slobs.
I can't stand it.
It's just, it's horrific. Cut up, you know, the surgeries and all this stuff. And it's just, it's almost like a freak show.
I can't stand it. All right, and the last thing, we're going to circle back to Cos. We're going to go back to Cosby.
Hanging a Huey to the Cosby.
Yeah, Temple University has rescinded the honorary doctorate that he got in 1991.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the disgraced comedian has had more than 20 colleges and universities revoke his honorary degrees after being accused of sexual assault.
Does he still have any standing?
And now being convicted. I don't know, Steve.
Did they all clear the deck on that?
I have a feeling that Temple, you know, might have been the last one to hold out until to see what the outcome of the case
was.
Most
because directly associated with
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah.
He graduated from there.
Yeah.
I mean, they can't take away that degree.
Right. In 1991, this is a released statement that they had given to the press. It says, in 1991, based on his career achievements, Temple awarded an honorary degree to William Cosby. Yesterday, Dr. Cosby was found guilty by a jury of the felony of aggravated sexual assault. Today, the Temple University Board of Trustees has accepted the recommendation of the university to rescind the honorary degree. At least three others, including Johns Hopkins, Notre Dame, and Carnegie Mellon, followed suit. And Wesleyan has asked the board to do the same. So there's still a few out there, I guess, Steve, but they're moving along now.
Many of them probably waited to see the result of this trial.
Yeah.
I don't know if there are going to be any holdouts after this.
I can't see that happening. Yeah. All right, we're ready for clips, y'all. With only two episodes left of iZombie, the series has been applauded for its comedic humor and fresh look on life. Here, Rose McIver explains season 4's shift in tone.
It's no longer a secret, being a zombie. That is something that is in the wider world of Seattle now. It's certainly not a popular thing to be. They're still the minority. And it's going to be interesting how politically it's handled very differently by different parties. Some people believe in integration. Some people believe in segregation. And it's pretty scary being in a new walled city of Seattle.
Okay. A new episode of iZombie premieres tonight 9 on the CW.
I have watched a few episodes of the show. It's good.
Yeah.
I decided I will have to cast you adrift.
Okay.
There's just too much TV.
Let's go to the next clip. In its second season, Man with a Plan has watched the kids of show not only what
I've watched the kids of show not only get bigger
no
of the show
I think that's what it's supposed to be has watched the kids of the show not only
it's Tonto Entertainment
not only grow age but also attitude.
Matt LeBlanc, good actor.
In this clip
make smile.
Grace Kaufman, who plays as Matt LeBlanc's daughter, talks about what it's like working with him on the show. Here it is.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry.
Come on.
Go for it.
After I really got to know him, he's just so nice and so supportive and such, like, a cool person to work with. I've learned so much from him, and he's really just, like, a big influence on my work.
Shut the f*** up!
Man with a Plan airs a new episode tonight at 8:30, and that's on CBS.
It's actually a good show. However, this season, like, Kevin Nealon plays his brother. The cast is good. But they brought in his dad, who's Stacey Keach, who's a good actor, and they've sort of added too many characters. We were just season one into learning about these guys and enjoying them. Stop muddying the waters.
Pump the brakes a little.
Pump the brakes. Okay. Step off, Jack.
All right.
Get out of my grill.
And there you go. That's what I have for you in the entertainment report this morning. We will have director Jason Reitman here in our studio. Has a new movie out starring Charlize Theron called Tully. It's coming out this weekend.
This Friday. Is the wife of Sully, Preston.
No, it is not. Sully and Tully?
Sully and Tully. No, this is the one that she put on the 50 pounds for it. Yeah, went into a depression and the whole thing, but it looks really good.
Yeah.
Preston and Steve Show on 93.3 WMMR. Like the podcast, you'll also love it live when you can call in. Weekdays from 6 a.m. to about 10:30 a.m. on the radio at 93.3 WMMR. Or stream the show live via MMR's mobile app.
There was some piece of video that was circulating over the weekend that is just so unbelievably cringeworthy. Oh, my God. It's from Let's Make a Deal.
Yes.
The Wayne Brady-hosted show.
Which I have to admit, I have not seen 1 second of.
Neither have I.
I always love Let's Make a Deal, but I it's on during the day. And
I hate Wayne Brady.
And we hate Wayne Brady. It's another part of that equation.
There's
of
the that,
worst
too.
Interviews ever on our show. He was just a jerk. But anyhow, he had these two people on. It was a girl named Jessie, a guy named Steve. And they're going to be, you know, participating in one of the contests.
Yeah.
And Wayne asks them how long they've been together. How long has this thing been going on? And I'm not going to play it. I just wanted to tell you, it was this guy gets cast into the friend zone on national television.
Oh, man.
And it is, I don't think the audio will do it justice because you got to see the look on this guy's face. He's just
oh, no.
Destroyed.
You haven't seen it, Kathy?
No.
All right. So what the deal? The mechanism for Let's Make a Deal, by the way, is that the host goes up into the audience, and they're all dressed in costumes to get noticed. So they're wearing. The couple is a Steve and I think Jesse.
Yeah.
And they're in their quote unquote prom outfits.
Uh huh. And yeah, they had some kind of prom
right.
event that was going on with the show.
Right. And yeah. And she's all energetic and giggly, where it becomes quickly apparent that he's like, no. Don't do this.
Yeah,
don't take me down this path.
Oh my
and
God.
Don't do it here.
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy.
So let me play this audio for you. We'll see how this translates just on an audio sense. Here we go.
That's awesome. Now, how long have you guys been together?
About 6 months.
That's it? It's new. Oh, it's newish.
We're friends. We're just friends, but he wants it.
Can we talk about this not in front of everyone?
look at his face.
It's complicated.
I'm single, guys. I'm single.
Oh my gosh.
Oh no, we're really good friends.
Oh,
that's terrible.
Jeez. And Wayne is just like looking around like,
oh my God.
So we have this.
And then he takes it off in another direction.
All right.
Oh, man.
Oh, that hurts. The friend zone thing, especially if they've now, what I can't tell is whether these guys have been, you know, maybe have a non-committal relationship where they're flirting, having some fun, a little bit of, you know, this and that. And then she's not ready to take it seriously or if nothing has happened yet and he's just hoping that it happens.
I hear you. I think what would belie the actual relationship status is he says about 6 months.
Yeah.
When Wayne Brady asked how long you've been together.
Yeah.
He would, it was anything else in his mind, he'd say, oh, we're just friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're just friends. We're just buddies.
Well, she's an a-hole.
You know, and then while he's clearly injured, you know, from that remark, she starts soliciting for guys to let her know,
yeah,
hey, I'm single.
In
fact, let's bang on him.
Oh my God.
So, Preston, there's somebody on Twitter I thought is pretty accurate. A woman writes, the worst things that can happen to you, 3 going to prison, 2 straight up dying, 1 this.
Yeah. That's terrible.
Listen, now, they're adults, and it's kind of a different story when you become an adult. But I remember in the days of high school being friend-zoned, and it was just crushing. It was just horrible. I took it so badly, and it just I'm sure I had some type of depression from it, because there were a girl that I would start to develop a communique with, a relationship.
Yeah.
I'm smitten with this person. It starts to happen. We're communicating, and then you get the friend thing. And
how long a process are we talking?
I don't remember, because it happened so many times.
Yeah.
Steve, and I couldn't tell you specifics, but then it would be like, I hate you. I hate you.
Yeah, because I don't want to be your friend.
Well, because you know what I mean?
I never got to, not a real hatred.
I know
what you're saying.
But
you become resentful, maybe more than hatred.
But it hurts so bad.
But what happens is that you start to do things normally out of, like, you change the way you are a little bit. You'll do anything to curry favor with this person.
Yeah. Right.
You know, and then there's a whole bunch of mini awkward moments along the way. Because if you are palling around with this girl, you're out at fun, and you're often asked, are you guys together? And then it's an open sore that never closes.
Oh, right.
And until you make an ultimate resolution now, to where you stand.
This guy, I don't necessarily know exactly what their deal was, because he says 6 months. So that leads me to believe that they're getting it on. They're doing something.
In his mind, they are.
Yeah.
Because you're not friends.
She's like, no, we're good friends.
You're not friends with somebody for 6 months without doing that. And then when somebody asks you how long has this been going on, you can be
getting it on and still be in the friend zone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. Because that's the point I'm getting at is I was put there, and I think it's worse when you've actually been active.
You've partaken of the fruit.
Yes. And then you get put in a friend zone after. Like, that is worse than just being ultimately put in the friend zone to begin with.
Really?
Yes.
I'm not sure I agree with that.
I don't know about
really?
That.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that,
because then you're...
You're
not going to think you're...
So I don't have that, but I got that.
Yeah, yeah. At least we had that.
Yeah.
We've had a few awkward moments here where, like, a guy and a girl will visit the studio, and afterwards, Preston will say, oh, how long have you guys been together? Or, and they're like, oh, well, we're kind of friends.
Or their brother and sister sometimes.
That happened too.
That's happened on many occasions.
Oh, sorry.
But listen, I want to speak to, going back to the other thing, because once I got into my, 20s and so forth, the heartache wasn't quite as hard. It wasn't as difficult or being interested in someone and finding out it wasn't reciprocal wasn't quite as hard as I think it was when I was a teenager. But I just want to speak directly to those of you who are going through this, who have gone through this. It happens. It happens to a whole lot of people. And eventually you're going to be okay. But I took it so hard, man. It was just really, really difficult.
I had the situation where for a while, listen, I've always had a lot of female friends. That's always been my deal. Like, friends. So that would often lead to friend zone status in some cases. And then I was casting friends into the friend zone who wanted more relationship-wise. I think, though, the more classic scenario is the guy being on the receiving end of the friend zone. And that's just the nature of the beast.
I can still name the friends from middle school to high school that I thought I had a shot at, and they never considered me at all a romantic option, and I was always in the friend zone. But I asked all three of those girls out and got shot down by all of them, and their names will be forever burned in my memory.
Yeah, it sucks. Let me go to
Mindy
some calls.
Gallo.
I'm gonna go to Joe.
Nick, it's Mindy. We can patch it up.
I'm gonna go to Joe. Hey, Joe, how you doing, brother?
Good morning. How are you, gentlemen? It's late today.
Good. Doing very well. What's your story, buddy?
I was actually in the friend zone and I was on the borderline of the brother zone, which is even harder to escape.
Oh, you're like a brother to me. Ah, I've heard that.
I'm one of very few that can say I escaped it, and my wife and I have now been married for just over 2 years.
All right. Instruct those out there how you went about converting friend zone to brother zone to marriage. How did you work that deal?
She did it.
She did it.
I'm not even going to bullcrap it. I was out running tractor trailers over the road. I was in Salt Lake City, Utah. I'm on the phone with her for about 3 hours, and she's like, I realized something. I'm like, what? She turns around and says, I may like this guy I'm talking to, but I'm in love with you. I couldn't say anything, but in my head, I was doing flips and losing my mind.
Wow.
So she says to you, you're out salting the road, or you're doing your job, you're talking on the phone, and she just out of the blue says she loves you. Had you had any indication whatsoever that her feelings had gotten that strong for you?
None at all. Before that, it was just like, oh, yeah, we're really good friends, and I'm just like, shoot me. Every time I heard, yeah, you're just a good friend, I love you like a friend, it's like, just shoot me.
Yeah.
And then that bombshell just dropped on me, and I just, for about 2 minutes, I'm like, what?
Well, yeah, I see.
Good for you, man.
Yeah.
Everyone looks, any guy in the friend zone looks for advice to get out of the friend zone, because it is a tough, tough deal to leverage, because ultimately, either she likes you or she doesn't.
Yeah. I'm going to go to Steve next. Hi, Steve, good morning.
Hey, is this Kenny Big Rig Rodder?
Yeah, that's right. You got him here.
Yeehaw.
What's up, Steve?
Well, when I was a senior in high school, I asked this girl out to prom, and I was absolutely head over heels enamored with her. She she was super talented, super beautiful, and I was, like, prepared to tell her how I felt when we were at the prom. But then at the end of our slow dance, she said something. She said, I think she said, you're a really good friend.
Mm.
And I kind of lost it there for a second.
Yep.
But what really sealed the deal was she left after the slow dance to go sit at the table that her boyfriend was sitting at, who was also at the same prom.
A boyfriend. She had a boyfriend. Did you know this?
She had a boyfriend. I did not know this, and I found it out the night of the prom.
Oh.
Nick found his prom date under another guy.
Yeah, it could have been worse.
Could have been worse. That's all you got.
Dude, people love that story, Nick.
Yeah. When you have to move a guy so that you can ask your girl where your car keys are,
thanks, Steve. By the way, and Steve points out there's a strategic way that some women will do it as opposed to being straight up and saying, listen, I just like you as a friend.
Yes.
That's pretty clear. That's exactly, I'm telling you this. I want you to know that. A sneaky way of doing it is, like he said, you're such a good friend. Instead of, I just like you as a friend. You're such a good friend.
Right, which hurts more.
And friend. To that point, guys in the room, consensus, so that ladies can hear this, which way would you rather be informed?
Directly
as well.
Yeah, probably.
Because it will. I'd rather, because it just shuts it down, and it's not like Dumb and Dumber. So you're saying there's a chance,
right? Where you're an idiot enough,
yeah.
Where you just might actually think that.
But okay, so but this is if there was that she was okay or into it for a little while, and now she's got to tell you no.
No, a girl can tell.
No, what I'm saying is I'm not supposed to tell every single guy friend that I'm not interested.
No, when you know that the guy, your receptors are up and you're sensing that he's looking for more or wants more, I think most guys would appreciate you saying, listen, I think you're great. I want to be friends, but you know, I'm
yeah, but
not
I don't find that to be the female's responsibility. If she's not putting up, if she's not giving any advances, or she's solely acting as a friend, why should she have to tell you?
She does not have to, but if she wants to let the guy know, the onus is not on her to do it, but if she's going to do it in a way that I think is less duplicitous.
Well, I know what Kathy's saying, though. So yeah, the guy has not been obvious about signs, and you legitimately think this is a platonic, nice friendship, and you say it, and secretly inside the guy really
wants something else,
and he hears that, and it's just deflating. It hurts.
Let me ask you.
And there's no malice. There's no intention. You know, you just legitimately think that, hey, we're good friends.
How many times... How many times in your life were you unaware that a guy wanted more, to be more than just friends? Were you ever shocked to learn that a guy you were hanging around with wanted more than just friendship? Like, out of the blue, sucker punch, like, oh, my God. Or did you always sort of have an idea?
God, I don't even remember. I mean, I had a lot of guy friends. I don't know. I don't know that I can answer that. I don't remember.
Yeah. We'll call your lawyer.
I'm going to go to Jordan. Jordan, good morning.
I think that says it all on this Monday.
Yeah.
It's Mondays.
Yeah.
So I was like kind of going on a date with this girl for like a month. We were going out. Spent a lot of money.
That's great. Yeah.
And she told me one night, she's like, hey, I want to meet your daughter. I was like, okay. She's like, can I be called Aunt Jamie? And I was just like, ugh.
Oh.
No.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, if you don't mind me banging her aunt.
Yeah.
And when you heard that, were you destroyed? Did you still try to work at it, or was that it? It was done.
Bother.
All right.
And then have you remained friends, though?
Yeah, we're still friends. I don't really go out with her, though.
Okay. Well, right. She's very expensive.
Interesting. All right. Thanks, man. Yeah, because, if you can take that rejection, even though it may not be direct on her part, she may not know that she's killing you by doing this, but if you can take that rejection and still remain friends, it's a cool thing, you know, but you're always going to want to at some point deep inside you.
I've managed to keep,
be with that person, you know?
Or deep inside her.
Yeah, or deep inside her.
Yeah.
Let me go to, I have Mike on the line. Hey, Mike, good morning.
Hey, guys. Gadzooks.
Gadzooks, what's up, buddy?
So I would, this is many, many years ago. I was dating this girl. I shouldn't say dating, but we were off and on for a couple months. And out of nowhere, she just stopped. And she started dating another guy. So it was like, I kind of took it to hint. But the only good part is, like, I got friend zoned, but we still fooled around, like, every once in a while after that. And it's, you know, I was okay with it. And, like, now we're still really good friends, but.
Well, that's friends with benefits.
That's another thing. That's a whole other category, because I think if a girl wants to you know that you're in the friend zone by having sex with another guy and going out with another guy, I think that's pretty overt.
Yeah.
You know?
See, that's how I was sort of friend zoned, because I was, to her, a friend with benefits.
Okay.
But I wanted to marry her.
You wanted to marry her.
You were in love.
No, I was in love. I was 18 years old, and
that's got to be a little hard.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been friend zoned, and the girl that you're friend zoned by is in a relationship with a guy who's just horrible? Like, there was a girl that I was friend zoned by, where the guy she was seeing made Tony Manero look like Stephen Hawking.
And you know better.
Yeah.
And you know better, and you can help her.
Exactly.
But she can't see that.
She can't. She could not see it.
Yep.
She loved this dummy, and that was it. That was it.
Sometimes it doesn't make any sense. And I've known women who seem to be smart and have their head on straight and everything, mm-hmm. but they like idiot guys.
And this guy would mistreat her, Preston, all the time. And she would come to me to talk about his transgressions.
How old were you when this happened, Steve? You remember?
17, 18?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me go to Emily. Hi, Emily. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Hey, what's up, Emily?
A couple months ago, I was on Tinder, and I met this guy. And for a couple months, like, we were just getting to know each other and whatever. Mm-hmm. And at some point, I met his friends. But around his friends, he would, like, tell them that this is my friend. Like, he didn't even put a label on our relationship, even though, like, sometimes he would say, like, we were more than just friends.
Yeah.
But then one day, we went out, and he was really drunk, and he mentioned a girl's name.
Yeah.
So then I looked her up, and I saw him, a girl, and a little boy, and then I found out that he was married.
Oh,
what? So that kind of confirmed that I was definitely just friends with him, even though, like, we kind of did everything a couple would do, and I was really confused until I found out that he was married with, like, a 3-year-old.
I don't think you're in the friend zone. I think you're in the manipulated, cheated on side action zone, and the guy's a scumbag for doing that.
Yeah, he didn't let you know. He wasn't straight up with that. So did you guys have sex? If you don't mind me asking so bluntly,
can you give us give us his number so we can ask?
Right. You did. Okay. Yeah, dude was scamming you.
He was scamming you, and it's horrible that you were treated that way.
It sucks, Emily.
I mean, like, he told everybody, his friends, everyone. Like, he would even talk about me with his wife, but mention me as, like, a friend from school and stuff like that.
What?
And I messaged her, and I told her all about it, and I think they're getting a divorce.
Well, whoa! Good.
Good. So. Yeah.
Oh, now you guys can go out.
Yeah. Now he's free. He's free.
I don't want to ever hear about
him. No. Good. Stay away from guys like that.
Oh, Emily. That's messed up. Yeah.
I think any...
friend-zoned.
Emily, or to any woman listening, if you're out there, I say you need to spend some time with the guy you're dating and his family and his wife and kids before you decide if he's the one.
Yeah.
Honestly, I wouldn't even have known, because he had so much free time on his hands. He was, like, living a double life. I don't even know how you do that.
Always judge a guy by the way he treats his wife. And then you'll know if he's the one for you.
Yes. It's like how people treat servers at restaurants.
Exactly. Yeah.
How does he treat his wife and children?
That's how you know.
Emily, I'm sorry that happened to you. Hope something better comes along, okay?
No, I don't feel bad at all. I mean, I feel bad for his wife and all, because...
Yeah.
Apparently, he called me a homewrecker. So
you weren't. Yo, listen.
He did it.
That chapter is closed, and now you're on to better things.
Yes.
I mean, you would have thought he would have put that stuff on his Tinder profile. But
As they say, he's being duplicitous. You got to let the guy.
I mean, it's like, at least use a fake name. Like, don't use your real name. Like, he mentioned a girl's name. I put the last name on, and it's like, oh, there we go.
Do you know what he was doing, Emily, just to explain the process? He was keeping things as maneuverable as possible, so in case there was a slip, he wouldn't get caught. Like, if he said, my name is Lord Esteban, And I'm, you know, and speaks with, and like, yeah, there's so many things that he could trip up on. Yeah. However, if he's mentioning your name in front of the wife
and friends,
it's to minimize slippage, you know?
Wow. All right. Thanks, Emily. Appreciate it. I don't think that's quite friend zone.
No.
What we were talking about.
That's different.
That's pretty messed up. We still need to do like a relationship, you know, advice segment from time to time.
Oh, we all right. Let's. We have two things we need to do.
We're good at
we
that.
Need to chop off comb overs and yep. and.
Oh my god!
And,
yeah.
Oh my,
yes, we
right.
do.
Right.
Yes, we're going to do.
We're
that.
We're going to do that
this summer. We're waiting for it to warm up a little bit.
That first one might actually help some relationships.
Right. Yes. You know? Stop getting with these. Get out of the friend zone and get into the auto zone.
Okay. Wait. Let me go to John. I want to hear this story. John, you're on the air. Good morning, buddy.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey, so what's your friend zone story?
Well, I met this girl earlier this year, and we hung out, hooked up and all that fun stuff for a couple months. And like about a month and a half ago, she officially kind of put me into the friend zone.
Mm-hmm.
And I was cool with it because I actually kind of agree with you, Preston. Like, if you did kind of some extracurricular things, it kind of just softens the blow for me.
Yeah.
So I didn't really care, but... So she contacted me about a month later and said she just wanted to meet for a bite to eat, and I was cool with that. So we went and hung out, and then at the end of the meal, she asked if I would go with her to the store to pick up a pregnancy test for another guy.
Oh man!
Let me ask you: are those pregnancy tests are they very heavy where you might need a man to help you pick it up?
Yeah. She's rubbing this in your face.
Yeah. This I'm getting the one that they just came out with. It's 300 pounds.
No, you know, she said she has, I guess, suffers from some sort of anxiety, and she just had an issue going by herself. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And
she didn't have any girlfriends she could call, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? You could even order it online.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of awkward.
It's very awkward.
I can understand. Yeah. Thanks, John. Appreciate it, man. Yeah, listen. The friend zone thing can be you have this sort of relationship going on, and then they drop it on you after you've already been together, or then there's the kind that which I was always a victim of because I was too much of a pussy, to say anything to the girls that I was interested in, and so in a non assertive sort of way, I would insert myself into a relationship communication, and then they would drop the bomb. You're such a good friend.
I know.
You're so nice.
However, if you are
inside,
a guy,
I'm just erupting.
You're dying.
Oh, it's just killing me.
If you are a guy who can learn how to be friends, like when Harry met Sally, if you can have female friends, it's a wonderful thing.
It is.
You learn nuances. You learn things
that'll
open up your eyes. That'll make you a better person to date.
Most definitely.
And be in a relationship with a woman.
And I'm not opposed.
I'm
not opposed to having female friends. I had legitimate friends that were buddies.
Yes.
That were female. And I love having those. And they, gentlemen, will open up the door of advice for you, and you should listen
straight up advice.
You should listen to the women that you're friends with in your life to get advice about other girls.
Yeah, I was I had been turned down so many times asking girls out that like it just got to a point where I'm like I'm not going to do this anymore.
Yeah,
but we're just going to hang out and be friends, and then hopefully you'll like me.
Lou, what are you doing this weekend?
No, I know. Yeah,
and that's what happened. That you know the girl who eventually friend zoned me. She's the one who kissed me.
Yeah.
She kissed me.
Suddenly it becomes the forbidden fruit now.
Yes.
Now the power struggle has shifted.
And then she we weren't even having sex. She said, I would have sex with you. And I said, okay, let me go find a rubber.
Yeah. But only
if
you help me go buy a pregnancy test. Because I got to get this baby out first, but you're next.
All right, I want to hear from Alyssa because she's got a theory, which on the surface I don't quite understand. I need to hear about
it. Right.
Hi, Alyssa, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, what's up?
So I was in a relationship for 7 years, and I had a friend who was a guy who made it clear to me that if anything ever happened in my relationship and took every opportunity to let me know, like, what a crappy guy I was in a relationship with,
right,
that he would always be there for me.
Uh-huh.
So my friends all knew about it, and we, like, developed this theory. It's called Next in Line Theory. And it's the guys that stay friends with you through those relationships, always there to wipe away your tears if there's a fight, because they're convinced that if anything happens, they're going to be next in line.
That is not that is a fact. That is not theory. That there are, and I think we've all done versions of that. However, sure. I've had many female friends that I was just solely a friend for and would do that anyway. So sometimes it's hard to delineate between the reason for being that way. But you're right. I think hope springs eternal for a lot of guys. And they figure, you know, just be there because it's eventually going to come crashing to earth and they'll jump in. Nick, to the point about the dating or being in the friend zone with a girl who is involved with a bad guy, a dummy.
Yeah.
I would never berate this guy to her, the girl I was in the friend zone with, because she knew it. She really knew it. Yeah. And, you know, so it would only make me, I wasn't going to fix her problem.
No, but I would bitch to her friends about the moron that she was dating.
Yeah. Oh, he did that all the time. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Did her friends know about that?
They all knew. Same thing. Yeah. Everyone knows.
They make it worse because, like, she should be with you.
Like, I know. No! Look at the way your ponytail lights up in the sun. And then and I guarantee you, Preston, Nick, one of those friends, unbeknownst to you, was friend zoned by you.
Probably.
Yeah.
Hey, but you know what? I think in hindsight, it ended up working out.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Thank God for my wife.
When I was 19, I wanted to jump off a bridge.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, I know. And that's part of the message why I was trying to share that earlier, that, you know, it can, listen, as bad as that feels, most likely there's something coming down the road that's going to be perfect for you.
Look at how it's worked out. Look at how by it's you're eating this true press release your assessment. It's not as bad as you think it is.
I know.
Just let it breathe a little bit, and then the real right one comes along.
But I also remember how bad it was.
It hurts.
And it hurts.
Yeah.
But just know that down the road, there's
a pregnancy test to purchase.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, go to the dollar store first. They're only a dollar there.
They're cheap.
Yes, before you spend $30 on a home.
But Alyssa, do you still, are you in a relationship now, or is it, and is it the, you still have your next in line guy?
No. So I actually never told him when me and the other guy broke up because I knew he would move in quick.
Yeah.
And so I actually ended up getting in a relationship and getting pregnant really quick. And that's how he found out.
Fortunately, the next guy who came along, jump on me. No. So do you think that if you were to, I mean, cause you don't want a stalker. Do you think the guy could get to that point? I mean, if he's hanging on all this time, I think, is that a possibility?
No. I think he saw his opportunity for 7 years, and then, like, when the eighth year rolled around and I was...
8 years is the cutoff. Eight years!
That's the statute of limitations.
8 years, I know.
Probably keep it moving, yeah.
Wow.
But we still, like, occasionally talk. We don't have negative feelings towards each other.
Yeah.
I just don't get the, like...
The romantic...
Your boyfriend's awful. Dump him, please.
There's another level to this, Preston. It's maybe a whole other topic, but there are women and guys who will use the friend zone status just for fun to pull someone along.
Oh yeah,
with the false possibility.
Yeah,
and then use them for things like purchasing pregnancy tests.
Those are evil people.
I have a friend who's doing that right now. Yeah. A female friend, and she is doing it to a guy who is way too into her, but she doesn't care because she likes the benefits.
Oh,
there we go.
God, that's harsh.
Wait. What, yeah, she doesn't care about what? I'm sorry.
She even has him do her essays.
No, he's real.
are they like doing anything?
Yes. Okay, they're having a full on sexual relationship, but he is very much into her, and it's been a year and a half. And she does not want a boyfriend. She does not. She's been honest. Like, it's not like she's pulling punches here.
Okay.
She's telling him straight up, but he's way into her. She's not into him in that way, but she enjoys the sex. And she likes being single.
Nah, I want to
clarify the essay.
Clarify the essay thing. I wasn't friend zoning that girl. I was using her.
You were using her.
Big difference.
You need to get the nomenclature correct.
I deserved all those friend zone things I got now that you brought that up, Steve. Yeah. Thank you very much. You're correct. So it all is a yin and yang, if you will.
Yeah.
But anyhow, it was cringeworthy video of this guy on Let's Make a Deal. I'll play it one more time of Wayne Brady's interviewing them. And this girl makes it clear that they're just friends and he thinks they've been in a relationship. Even if it's fake, I don't care.
Yeah.
It's just you've had this happen.
That's awesome. Now, how long have you guys been together?
About 6 months.
That's it. It's new. Oh, it's newish.
We're friends.
Oh. We're friends.
She's giggling, like giddy laughing the whole time.
That's it. It's new. Oh, it's newish.
We're friends. We're just friends. Can we, he wants it.
Can we talk about this?
Wait, did you hear? We're just friends, but he wants it, and then she's cut off.
Yeah.
He wants it to be more is what she's about to say.
Just friends, but he wants it.
Can we talk about this not in front of everyone,
Jesse?
She drunk? I mean, it's a small penis. A super small penis with a stupid mustache. I don't know what woman would sleep with him, but I really he's a great friend.
Oh, my God.
Single.
It's complicated.
I'm single, guys. I'm single.
I'm single, what? Guys. I'm single.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Oh, that's God. That's horrible.
Is it okay if I give them your email so they can contact me?
Through him. Oh, it's horrible. All right, we need to take a break because we got to get you that special word and number to get you some money, gang. $1,000. It's MMR's birthday bucks. We'll come back with that in the bizarre file. And director Jason Reitman in our studio today.
All this year, 93.3 WMMR celebrates 50 years of rocking Philadelphia, and we're celebrating with the best of everything that rocks, including something brand new, tapping the keg for our first ever beer festival, WMMR's Birthday Beer Bash. Yeah. Cheers to 50 years. Saturday, June 23rd, outdoors at Sugar House Casino. Throughout the afternoon, enjoy unlimited samples of over 100 beers, plus live music, food trucks, tailgate games, and lots more. Tickets on sale now. Now, get to WMMR.com for tickets and more info. VIP and early bird discount available while supplies last. WMMR's Birthday Beer Bash. Cheers to 50 years. From 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks. MMR's Birthday Bucks. Birthday Bucks.
All right, gang, WMMR Philadelphia, A&T Chevy in Sellersville, loaded up with $1,000 for this very hour, your chance to win. You know we do this many times throughout the day, so the 8 o'clock hour, then 11, 1, 4, and 6 p.m. At the top of those hours, we give you a special word and number for you to text, and here's what we're going to do. Right now, you need to text the word WINGS, W-I-N-G-S, WINGS. Text that word to this number I'm about to give you. The number is 40772. It's a special company-wide short code number. You don't want to send that word to our regular text number. You send the word WINGS to 40772. You have until 15 minutes past the hour to do it. Good luck from MMR and A&T Chevy in Sellersville.
Now, bizarre. WMMR presents bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
And it is brought to you by A.D. Moyer, voted the number one window dealer in the Tri-County area for 15 consecutive years. Don't just replace your windows. Upgrade your home with Anderson Windows. ADMoyer.com. We'll start with a story that I was forwarded dozens of times over the weekend. Thank you. I appreciate it. But they knew this had our name written all over it. Fears of a gas leak caused around 500 students and staff to be evacuated at a university library in Melbourne, Australia on Saturday. But instead of poisonous vapors, the 40 firefighters and specialists called to the scene found a rotting durian fruit.
There you go. Oh,
stashed disgusting. In a cupboard somewhere. Yep. Melbourne's Metropolitan Fire Brigade had sent out an alert about a possible chemical hazard at the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology after the smell of gas was reported at the campus library.
So we had fresh durian in here.
Yeah.
That was rotting durian.
Yes. A spokesperson told The Sun that the odorous Southeast Asian fruit set off alarms after it filtered through the air conditioning.
It actually set off alarms. Wow.
Firefighters gave the all clear after the smelling fruit was located and removed.
Wow.
Of course, durians are banned from Singapore's subway system and from many hotels around Asia.
So but the fact that it could set off alarms shows you how powerful that stink is.
Yeah, and especially when it's rotting.
Yeah.
It really put a big one off. A Tennessee woman's birth story has gone viral after she claimed on Twitter that she gave birth by herself in her hotel room during a layover in Turkey while on her way to Germany, and she did it by using tutorials on YouTube.
Of course.
Yeah.
You can do any. Ask your wife. She does everything around the house on YouTube.
Absolutely.
You could have saved a lot of money on Caroline.
Tia Freeman, a 22-year-old member of the Air Force, said that she didn't know that she was pregnant until her third trimester. In a series of tweets and GIFs shared, she explained that the birth control she was on prevented her from getting her period every month, and she hadn't gained any extra weight, so she didn't have a reason to suspect anything. She was initially in denial and had an upcoming trip booked to Germany, so rather than cancel, she decided to go anyway, and it was a 14-hour flight. She said there was a complimentary meal. Everything had meat in it. I'm a vegetarian, so I was like, I can't eat this, but it's 14 hours and it's too long, so I decided to eat the salmon, hoping I wouldn't get sick. The salmon. Yeah. Freeman said that she started cramping about an hour before they were scheduled to land. She wasn't sure if it was due to the flight or what she had eaten.
Doesn't seafood help promote going into labor?
I'm not sure. There's some seafoods you're not supposed to
eat.
I do know that when you're pregnant. So anyhow, she closed her eyes and she tried to sleep it off. She didn't realize she was in labor until they landed in Turkey, where she had a 17-hour layover. She claims that she tried to Google whether she was in labor, but her water didn't break, so she wasn't sure. She said, I'm not giving birth in this airport, so I started gassing myself up because I am not having a baby in this airport, she tweeted. She made it through customs and eventually to her hotel, where she watched a YouTube clip on how to deliver a baby.
Jesus.
Said she filled the bathtub full of warm water, grabbed a towel to bite onto, and timed her contractions, which at that point were 1 minute apart. She said, luckily, it happened quickly. I only had to push five or six times before the baby popped out. She said, let me tell you, babies are buoyant. She said that little joker went bloop and floated right up to the top of the water. She gave birth to a boy named Xavier Atta. She allegedly used Google to figure out how to deliver the placenta and placed it in a sanitation bag. She said she sanitized shoelaces using a teapot to clamp the umbilical cord before cutting it with one of her knives.
There was no moderately decent medical care within the area.
I have no idea why she did this.
It's not like she was in the middle of a desert.
Yeah.
You know, she was in a major area. Preston, apparently at the end of the YouTube video, there was an ad for a tactical flashlight, and she bought that too.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. She said, umbilical cord cut, and I did a mighty fine job, if I do say so myself. At this point, exhaustion is beginning to set in, but I need to clean up the bathroom because it looked like the set of a horror movie.
Oh, my God.
She said she wrapped the baby in a towel, breastfed him, and went to sleep. She allegedly made him a shirt out of one of hers and returned to the airport the next day via a taxi to ask the airline staff what to do next. So she said they called in customs, the police, and a doctor and a nurse came in to check my baby and to see if I actually gave birth. And the airline higher-ups were there as well. I was bombarded with questions, but I finally proved that I wasn't a trafficker. They thought maybe she was trying to steal a baby.
Yeah.
During this, I called the U.S. Embassy in Turkey, and she thanked the Turkish Airlines and shared that staffers bought Xavier his first outfit before bringing her to the U.S. consulate. And she applied for his birth certificate and passport and was taken to the hospital.
Well, I think it's amazing. Wow. I think she might be a little loony.
Yeah. Go to the hospital.
Go to the freaking hospital.
Find a doctor. That's probably...
I need a Wi-Fi connection.
A lot of things could have gone wrong. They didn't, but they could have gone wrong. I love this story. This is out of a place called Lordstown, Ohio. A local farmer is going to extreme measures to show that he's not happy with some of the county residents. Harvey Lutz is his name. Now, he planned to sell his farm property to the company that owns TJ Maxx.
Yeah.
But the people, in Lordstown aren't happy about the idea of the traffic, and so they wanted to put the deal in jeopardy.
And they're more Ross people.
Well, listen to this. Lutz said, fine. What I'll do is I'll raise chickens for the Kentucky Fried Chicken Company instead.
Oh, boy.
And to give his neighbors an idea of what they would be in for, he dumped chicken manure all over the land. And he wrote, guess what? I'm allowed to build a chicken barn if I want, and that's my statement. So I'm working with two barns, 650 feet long, 55,000 birds per yard.
Jesus.
Per barn. He said, wake up, smell the roses, maybe, hopefully instead of manure. So he said, Lutz said that he's hopeful he proved his point and the original land deal will be given the green light. But he says that he's prepared to make good on his threat to become a mega chicken farmer. Those things stink, dude.
Wow.
They're horrible smelling.
It's quite a statement. Does TJ Maxx sell chickens?
No, they don't. Oh. So he's putting up the roadblock. All right, and then finally, we'll end with this story. In Florida, a man accused of practicing karate kicks on swans at a park appeared before a judge on Friday morning. Rocco Joseph Mantella was granted a $1,000 bond after being charged with animal cruelty charges. Witnesses reported seeing a man at downtown Orlando's Lake Eola, later identified as Mantella, kicking animals throughout the park. Witness told officers that he saw the man practicing karate kicks and then kicked two swans in the head.
Stop looking at me, swan!
And another one in the back end. The kicks were hard
enough. He was upset.
To knock down a swan.
Stop looking at me, swan!
And the man also kicked a small duck that appeared to be resting.
You have offended my pond.
Mantella was arrested at the park, and obviously...
Look at this picture.
They took him off the jail. He's
He looks like Dov Davidoff.
Yeah. You're right. More psychotic version of Dov. And that's what I got for you. That is this morning's Bizarre File, my friend. Hey, you still have a few more minutes. Five, in fact, to text in the word wings to 40772. We give you until 15 minutes past the hour to do that. So text the word wings to 40772. You will officially be in the running for $1,000. If you don't win this time around, we'll have another shot at 11 and then at 1 and then at 4 and then at 6. One random texter is going to win $1,000. That's from MMR and A&T Chevy in Sellersville. Good luck to you. We'll be back in a moment.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
Your brain has the shell on it.
Thank you very much, Kathy. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, we're going to have Jason Reitman in the studio in a little while. It's going to be pretty cool. The movie Tully is going to be opening up on Friday, so we'll get him in. Real quick, I just had to give a, I can speak openly with you guys off air about the Avengers Infinity War.
It's good, right?
I freaking loved it.
It's good to be able to talk about it.
Oh, yeah, to be able to, finally we can.
Oh, yeah.
Last week, I kept putting my headphones on. Yeah. I'm like, all right, you guys are talking, I'll put my headphones on, go ahead, talk away.
And the great thing is Kathy doesn't care.
Yeah. She doesn't.
Yeah. I know exactly what happens in the end.
Yeah, she knows everything. We can talk about it.
And even the extra scene at the end of the credits, she knows everything.
I know,
Same with Marissa, she's like, I'll never watch it. She's like, but I do need to know, like, I feel like I need to know these things. So I told her, but you guys know Marshall Harris from NBC Sports Philadelphia. Yeah. He is obsessed over this movie, and I've had to, you know, sort of talk him off the ledge because he just wants to talk about it, right?
Yeah.
I said, well, just find small groups of people, break into small groups.
That's what you got to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. It's got to be a smaller group of people.
You agreed, though. We were very, very cautious because even tonally, things you say could rob someone of the experience.
You didn't give anything.
Nothing.
I had no spoilers whatsoever from the conversation you guys had on the air.
So were we with our spoiler free assessment? Were we correct on everything?
Yeah. In fact, it was vague enough to where I didn't even think about it.
Yes, good. That's perfect.
But,
yeah, you can.
But just listen. You'll love it. You'll love it if you are into superhero movies. You'll love it. Absolutely.
And what are the numbers again for the weekend?
250 million.
And worldwide, 650 million?
Yeah, like 650 million.
Wow.
Jesus. Speaking of superheroes, do we have the audio of Hugh Jackman, Casey, was that sent over?
You know what?
So Hugh Jackman was doing a video where he was wishing a fan a happy birthday.
A fan or his dad or somebody giving a birthday wish.
All right.
He's in a hotel room.
Yeah, and there's a moment where he gets interrupted, and you would have to see it to get the whole thing.
Yeah.
Should I just play it first?
Just play and see if people can pick out who it is.
Here we go.
I'm really, really busy doing some stuff, and if I... Yeah, don't give him too much attention. That's why I can't be there. There'll be some. Happy birthday. Have a great night.
Let the dogs out. Who let them out? No one knows. No one ever solved that mystery.
All right. If you can't tell by the voice, in his hotel room, behind him in the bed, is Deadpool.
Full costume.
Yeah. And it sounds like Ryan Reynolds.
Yes.
It's got to be.
It's got to be,
right?
Ryan Reynolds.
I think it is.
Yes.
And they have this back and forth. I love it. I love that they're doing this.
I saw a trailer again for that this weekend for Deadpool 2, and they still say this film is not yet rated, which kind of blows me away. Like, it's going to be a hard R, right?
Sure. Yeah. As was the original. Yeah. We were talking earlier this morning, Preston, about I hope this Hugh Jackman back and forth thing, if he makes a cameo in this one, that would be sensational.
Yep.
Very funny.
So we're going to have Jason Reitman in a little bit. His next movie that comes out after Tully is called The Front Runner, and it's about Gary Hart, and Hugh Jackman plays Gary Hart.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, really? So Jason Reitman is just wrapping up working with Hugh Jackman on this movie.
Okay. So we'll most likely have a screening for Deadpool. We'll probably announce that either later on this week or early next week. I think it's going to be later on this week, but don't quote me on that.
All right.
I wish, just for my kids' sake, that they would have two... One, you know, like hard R or whatever, and then like another can make some edits and make a PG 13 type of movie, you so know I can what? Take my kids.
Let them wait. Yeah. Let them wait till they're old enough to see it, because you would
rob forever, Steve.
You would rob it. You would rob it of so much that makes it so wrong and so right.
That's what I'm saying. Like, just, you know, have one for us, for the big kids.
God, even the credits
yeah.
in the movie at the beginning and the end are hilarious.
I know.
It's great. So I can't wait for that one. Listen, speaking of going to the theater and that experience, I want to ask you, Casey, and you, Nick, as well. Kath, I don't know. Have you taken Jace to see 3D movies?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does he want to take the glasses with him when you leave?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. My daughter still wants to do that. She's like, yeah. I just want to keep these. I'm like, no, you got to put them back. Got
to
give them away.
I've had to teach them.
We have, on occasion, stolen a couple pair, and then they sit around the house and nothing gets done with them.
Unless they're like collector, like cat. I have one that has the Captain America symbol
too.
On it.
We got sent those. Yeah, those were special ones. But
I saw it 3D this weekend, and I brought 5 kids with me, and I waited at the exit for them to come out, and I said, all right, give me your glasses, because it's every single time. So somebody wants to take them. I said, hey, I'm into glasses, and I made sure I had all of their glasses in my hands, and then I put them in the
bin. We go to Legoland, and they have a 4D movie there. It's just like a quick 20-minute Ninjago movie, so he's used to that, and you have to give those back. He's just used to it.
So other people can see the movie in 3D.
So the reason I bring that up is because...
Are they dirty?
No.
Oh. They're full of semen. They're dripping with semen.
Oh, jeez.
I'm using it as a segue into this story.
Okay.
People are stealing regularly the free... they're taking the pillow and blanket from airlines, and you're not supposed to take those.
Right.
There's a report that cabin crews from United Airlines, American Airlines, British Airways, an increasing number of luxury pillows and blankets are being stolen.
Okay, they're not luxury.
Even luxury pillows, quote unquote. The only time they're good and comfortable and warm is on an airplane. Mm-hmm. The second you get off, you realize this is a snot rag and a...
Yeah, let's be
this
clear.
This is nothing.
Yeah. They are not luxury.
It's just tissue.
And they never have enough for everybody either. There's always a handful.
Well, in first class, they give you the lavish luxury pillows. If you've ever... occasionally when I've had the great joy of being able to do that, they're really not much different than, you know, they're just like small head pillows.
Yeah, I mean, other than first class, I didn't even know that, I don't see people use them anymore.
Yeah, you know what, you're right about
that.
Some
of the airlines will not provide them.
Then it might be the first classes, because it says airlines recently upgraded these items in their upscale classes to bedding from Saks Fifth Avenue, Casper, and White Company,
respectively. Those sons of bitches, they're already, well, here's the deal. If you're flying in one of those setups where... you know, they have like the little full fold-out seat where it's like a bed.
Yeah.
And if you've ever had the opportunity, it's phenomenal.
Yep.
They're only $1 million to fly up there. But we're looking at pillows that look like full-size pillows. Why would you clip those pillows?
I got one in coach for an international flight recently. So we went to Iceland in March and got the cheap pillow and the cheap blanket. And you're right, Steve, they don't really make much of a difference. However, I did get the thing on the back of the seat where it's like a pillow, that comes out.
The flap that comes around. That works.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
That thing is a revelation.
Yes.
In fact,
how come they all don't have that?
I flew all the way to Sweden and didn't know I had one of those.
Oh, really?
on the head. So it's bendable.
Right.
And you can position it to where you can lean your head on it properly.
Yep.
And then on the way, we were flying on the way back to the States, and I'm like, oh, you can use that. So you bend this, Casey.
No way.
Yes.
The most impossible thing on a plane is getting the right neck angle.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
With a pillow or leaning against a wall or whatever it is. This has this bendable thing on either side of your head that you can change, and you can lean your head against it and actually get some sleep.
And that's not a first class. The whole plane has those.
The whole plane had it.
Yeah.
So it was an international flight. They should do that on domestic. You should do that on every single flight.
They should do that on SEPTA.
Yeah.
I have never been on a flight where I thought, man, I could totally use a blanket right now. I have never been chilly enough where I'm, okay,
Here's what I do. I will always have like a jersey or like a light jacket. I'll keep that with me. I'll put that over me if I'm a little bit chilly. It's going to be better than that sheet of toilet paper they call a blanket.
Mm. Well, anyhow, a representative said that, this is a director of premium services, said at American Airlines, it's a huge problem right now. There's this novelty of a new product.
Where are you going with that pillow, Kenny?
And everybody wants to take them with them. Things just tend to walk away. United has already started combating the problem by adding a new departure script that reads, we hope you enjoyed the pillows, blankets, and bedding during your flight. Please be sure to leave these items on board as you exit the aircraft.
They should leave, like, ink security tags on them, like they do it, you know, as you quad
die pack.
They detonate.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, in my lifetime, I have, as far as noticing people on planes, like being like rude or whatever, I feel like I've lucked out. I had one guy farted a lot on
that was
one
you.
Flight. No, yeah. No. Besides me, one guy farted a lot. And then other than that, you know, I really have made it unscathed.
I've flown a lot in my life when mm-hmm. especially when I was doing stand up, flying quite a lot. The percentage of bad experiences to overall fine, it was minimal.
But I found a new Instagram follow. I believe it's called Passenger Shaming, and it's people taking pictures of other passengers on flights. And what some people do on planes is absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. Well, they think they're in their own living room.
Could you imagine sitting in a seat and having somebody's feet over your head? Could you imagine that?
I know. Listen, but Steve's right. Percentage-wise, I've only had two times where I wanted to punch someone in the face.
And one of them haunts you.
Oh, both of them do. I've told the stories before, and I'm not going to go down that path again because it just gets me angry when I think about it. And you know what? They were both women.
Right. Yeah.
Which you just, as many jerks as there are out there, the two times I've had a really bad experience on a plane have been these two biddies. Old ladies, I just want to punch in the face.
Did Kathy ever share on air her experience when we were flying to Clearwater with the... Yeah. You did? You talked about that lady?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, that's right. In fact, Kathy and I sat together on the flight back and we saw her. And she didn't utter a peep. She was
okay on the way home.
Contained. Somebody had an interesting question. If you are taking a trip, this is a text I just saw.
Yes.
If you're taking a trip and you have the opportunity to fly first class one of those directions... Which way do you do it? Do you do it there or do you do it on the way
going.
Back?
Ooh.
I kind of think so, too.
Because here's my thing. And my dad used to fly constantly. And so he'd get these upgrade miles. This is years ago, years and years ago. So occasionally when I would get to go on a trip or I'd go with a friend or something, I could get the bump up to first class. If you go first class and you're going like overseas or something, you're going to lose a day and a half because you didn't get enough sleep. You're going to be so groggy that it's going to ruin the trip because you're just write off one day because you've wasted it. If you can arrive somewhat refreshed and if you can get a little bit of time to take a nap and be more comfortable, mm-hmm. I think that's the better deal. You get the most. You're spending the money to go take this vacation. You know, if you arrive groggy, you're losing a day.
Yeah, I also think that on the way there. This is an adventure. This is the beginning of the adventure.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a whole new day here. And why not start
exciting.
It off in the most special, exciting way you can?
We're going back home in first class.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I see what you guys are saying. I think I'd want it coming home just because I would want to wrap up the trip in style and not end it on a cramped note. And having known what first class was like on the way out, I'd be like, oh, man, that was great. And I got to come home and with these losers and coach.
I think I'd want to be reminded where I came from.
Humble you.
By the way, this is what you are and this is what you'll always be.
Coach.
Yeah, you're a coach person. Remember that. Got a little hoity-toity over there in Europe, didn't you? All riding around in your first class. Seemed like a great thing. You can get used to it. Well, don't, because you know you're returning to your home. Your wife doesn't love you. Your kids aren't too thrilled with you.
So either way, if you have the opportunity to do it, it does make a bit of a difference. So, but don't steal the pillows, damn it.
Oh, Jesus, it's going to cripple the airline industry.
Absolutely.
I mean, how are they going to make money? I guess they could charge more for tickets.
Yeah, maybe. What are your thoughts on nipples?
Love them.
I mean,
I'm tired of trying to segue into things. I just want
that's a good way. Just switch it.
Well, you could say that the landing gear of a plane when it's part of the way up looks like plane nipples.
Okay, thank you very much. I didn't think
have you ever noticed.
You ever notice it when a plane is putting its gears up, looks like it has nipples?
Speaking of nipples,
there's a curious divide on social media about when, where, and what kind of female nipples are allowed to exist in photos. Pictures of post-mastectomy scarring and breastfeeding are generally okay, as is nudity in art, but Instagram strictly forbids nipples on breasts outside of those guidelines.
Okay. I do find this interesting because I saw a photorealistic painting of a model nude.
Okay.
And that was allowed on Instagram. Of course, you can post anything on Twitter.
Yes.
But on Instagram, you cannot. It was a very realistic painting of a nude model that was sexy.
I wonder if Facebook would let you get away with that, too.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But I have not been on Facebook in a long time, but what is the level of... Is there nudity allowed on Facebook?
I don't think so, no.
Yeah. But they changed the rules on YouTube, too, because you used to not be able to post anything that was salacious on YouTube, and now you can get away with more.
Well, according to Facebook, its policies on nudity have become, quote, more nuanced over time, and the company now recognizes that the naked female body can signify more than sexual titillation. It can also be used to protest, to raise awareness, or educate.
However, they will allow, though, in the new, so as they're maybe relaxing their standards on that, they will allow snuff films on Facebook.
Okay, well, they're starting to open up. They said, while we will restrict some images of female breasts that include the nipple, we allow other images, including those depicting acts of protest, women actively engaged in breastfeeding, and photos of post-mastectomy scarring. Uncovered female nipples need not apply, it says.
It's interesting how, like in different cultures as well, you know, and what is permissible and what is not, and what, you know, what sets people off. And this is all, I think it's the aesthetic call of who's ever running Facebook and, you know, Zuckerberg and all the different ones. But the most, if you're talking about the Wild West, Twitter's your place.
Yeah.
Yeah, we saw Sarah Clayton's nips on Twitter last week.
Did you?
Yeah. Well, there's a picture of her today where she just has chains over her nippies.
Nippies. And,
Instagram or Twitter?
Nippies. That was on Twitter.
Yeah, okay. Go to Twitter.
Yeah, put up Sarah Clayton, and I'll let you guys see it.
I was just watching a YouTube video about how to give birth. So.
But, yeah, they and now a lot of girls are using these...
Yes. You're wearing chainmail.
No, just chains.
Just chains. Yes.
But now what women are doing are these kind of clear strips that go across that you Photoshop onto there or you edit it with, and they're just the thinnest of thin. Like, it just frosts the area a little bit.
Honestly, at that point...
I know.
Knock it off.
I know.
It's like it's like the people who are right having full-blown to completion sex through clothing because they're saving themselves.
Meshies.
Wait, well, what
meshies. Yeah. Give it up. You're doing it anyway.
Yeah. What are the clear strips? You mean so they can post on Instagram? Or
yes.
Just me? Okay.
Yeah. You know who has a lot of those is Elizabeth from our Totally Office calendar.
Elizabeth Rose and... Jaws.
Ron Jaworski?
Ron Jaworski.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a lot of that. A lot of that stuff going on.
I got to tell you.
Look at these nipples. I'm like a 21-year-old.
Yeah, there's the chains. There's a picture of the chains.
Yeah, I'll honk each one of them. Ready? Here we go.
Here we go.
There you go.
What's your nips? That's him tooting his boobs, squeezing his boobs.
I mean, it's asinine. You know, like you can see that stuff on... one social media platform, but not on another.
Twitter has the... Oh, wow. So if you start... Yeah, this is actually
okay,
the...
This is what I'm talking about.
That's a communion
picture.
See
that clear strip going across there? And this is... yeah.
Okay.
We're seeing that, you know. What more are we not seeing?
It's like putting a Mento over your crotch. And everything's covered now.
Right.
No. You might... At that point... All right, it's no matter how obscene the picture would have been, it's more obscene that you're thinking that's obscuring it.
So butt cracks are okay, right?
Butt cracks,
I think so.
Dingleberries, yeah. The whole thing. Yeah. It's basically human produce.
So, like, but what? All right, never mind.
What are you trying to say?
Well, I was going to say something really gross.
Okay,
but why not? I'm just going to go for it. All right. I'm going to hold my nose, and here we go. What if you were to put a strip over the crack and the exit, and there was a turd coming out, and you don't put a thing over the turd? That's the gross part.
It's funny because actually they're bringing up the same question on CNN over the weekend about whether you could show fecal expulsion if you had a.
You probably can't, Case. They probably wouldn't allow that.
I think probably that was addressed during the McCarthy hearings.
Maybe. Facebook's nuance and acceptance of non-sexualized nipple imagery is a step toward the normalization, they're saying, rather than the sexualization of the female body. But it still doesn't quite bridge the gap between how men and women's bodies are treated online, because guys can show all the nip you want, you know?
It's true.
Yeah.
It all comes down to the rules provided by the provider, yeah. and what the culture will react to.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, that's therein lies the question. Like, what's the difference between the culture surrounding Instagram versus Twitter?
Yeah, well, it's the company's personal preference.
So. But that has nothing to do with culture.
No, I know. Who knows? But they're starting to change, I guess, a little bit here and there what they're allowing.
Didn't you post a picture, a YouTube video a while ago? It's just of your kids having fun in the bathtub, and that was
years ago. Okay. That was when Parker and Carter were just babies.
Just babies.
And in the tub showing skin whatsoever, and that was kicked off. That was in the early days of Facebook.
Well, that was disappointing.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. I saw this story. I don't know if we're in the junk drawer or the noticer or whatever.
Oh. The notice drawer.
It's a mixed world of mixed signals. Where are we? We're in the notice drawer.
You guys saw the Golden State Killer story last week.
Yeah, it was amazing that they finally got this guy. And Patton Oswalt's wife had written a book. She spent years and years and years trying to get him captured.
There was a story that you sent me, Steve, that says that he may have been driven to rape and murder dozens of people because of an unending hatred for his ex-fiance.
Yeah.
A blogger who's gone into hiding had apparently posted this on Saturday. During one of his sexual assaults, he had apparently screamed, "I hate you, Bonnie." A clue helped lead detectives to allege killer James DeAngelo, who had a Bonnie in his past. Bonnie Yultzen, the former Bonnie Jean Caldwell, was engaged to this guy in the early 1970s, but broke it off and went on to marry a wealthy accountant.
So that set him off.
Maybe, yeah.
Murders, rapes, robberies, torture.
Yeah.
I heard another thing that helped get him caught was family members doing DNA tests, like ancestry DNA tests, and they were...
I heard that as well. Okay. Yeah. I don't know if that was confirmed, but that might stand to reason.
No, I did catch a story about that. I didn't read the details of it, Casey, but I did hear that Ancestry.com, I think that very site may have played a part in
I found out I was the Golden State Killer.
Right.
Which
when I was growing up, I always wore Lederhosen and did all that. And then I took a blood test and found out I'm the Golden State Killer. Apparently, I have multiple personalities.
It freaks some people out, that information is available to...
So I traded my Lederhosen and I bought some machetes.
But I mean...
Yeah.
They, from what I understand, a large culling of that information comes from the archives kept by the Mormons.
Well, what they can do, Case, they can get, if they have DNA evidence of a crime, and then they start to narrow down things to a suspect, but maybe that suspect isn't available to get, maybe they might be dead or something like that. Relatives' DNA can help to narrow that down and indicate whether or not it was that person. That's what I've understood. Can be the case.
It's wild.
Yeah,
definitely. And then there was somebody who might have been serving jail time incorrectly.
Yeah, that happens. DeAngelo, the killer, had met Bonnie Caldwell when they were both students at Sierra College, 20 miles from Sacramento. They announced their engagement in the May 14th, 1970 edition of Bonnie's hometown newspaper, the Auburn Journal, which at the time wrote, "No definite date has been set for the wedding."
Oh, boy.
DeAngelo was employed by a crane and hoist company and affiliated with the Vets Club, Honor Society, a whole bunch of stuff in the paper. But 2 years later, her wedding to a guy named Michael Graff, Graff Yultzen, appeared in that same newspaper. So in fairly short amount of time, she went from leaving him to marrying another guy.
Could you imagine? Well, listen, it's not like he could you imagine? He might have gone off the deep end. But her marrying him, talk about dodging the proverbial bullet.
Yeah. So this may have been part of it. Listen, he probably had a seed of this evil in him already.
Well, the torturing thing indicates, just complete derangement. He enjoyed... What was the thing he would do, Preston? He would...
So he would break in, and if there were a couple there, a husband and wife, he would bind the husband, I guess the wife too, and then he would put stacks of plates on the guy's back and have him lay on the ground. And he said, if I hear those plates crash, if I hear them fall on the ground, I'm going to come back in and kill you and kill her. And then he would rape the wife while this guy was either listening or watching or something along those lines.
It's just...
Yeah, it's messed
astonishing.
Up. Messed up. All right, we need something lighter.
We do need something lighter. Airplane pillows, perhaps.
No.
We'll just go with the noticer case.
We're just going with the noticer. Oh, that's the wrong one. There it is. All right. I did notice this story as well that I thought was worth bringing up to you guys. I went to Chick-fil-A over the weekend.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
My daughter loves Chick-fil-A. And I didn't notice this when I was in the drive-thru, but I noticed this in a story that says when you go to Chick-fil-A, the employees usually respond.
Keep going. It's a chicken term.
They respond.
And here we respond.
No. Instead of saying thank you, they say my pleasure.
Okay.
You ever notice that?
No.
I have not noticed that. I noticed the story about it.
All I ever got was get your chicken-eating ass out of here.
I saw a... Okay, I'm sorry.
Fox News reports that that legend has it that the chain's founder, Truett Cathy, or Kathy, I'm not sure, got the idea while staying at the Ritz-Carlton. Reportedly, he felt when employees there replied with my pleasure, it made the place stand out as a luxury establishment, and so he brought the term to Chick-fil-A.
It's always been my perception of Chick-fil-A as a luxury establishment. Whoa, I got to go buy a tie before we go in here.
Exactly.
I'm so underdressed.
I am way underdressed.
I read an article recently about the subtle art of people no longer saying you're welcome because there's this presumed snobbishness attached to saying you're welcome instead of like replying with something like thank you. So if I were to say thank you, Preston, if you said you're welcome to me,
yeah,
like you're like, yeah, you're welcome. You know what I mean?
I've never noticed that.
Neither have I. But
I do. As a matter of fact, and that you bring this up, like I try to say you're welcome now because a lot of times I'll say no problem.
Okay.
Yeah, no problem.
Or things like that, because to me it's like, well, of course it's just the wrong thing because you don't want to be. It's a psychological thing, but I should just say you're welcome. Someone's making the gesture of thanking me for an effort I made on their behalf. You're welcome.
But people take that the wrong way.
I know.
Which is asinine.
So do they?
But they do. Yes.
Well, as if like, you should say thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
you're welcome.
Kind of. I know what you mean.
Yeah. That's what the basis of this article was.
Well, I don't know. If you take the word welcome on its basic definition, welcome means it's an encompassing thing. Come along, be a part of this.
Get in the van.
You are welcome here. Get in the van. No, you are welcome here. Meaning it's a good thing.
Yeah,
it's a good word.
No, well, you're welcome. It should be a good thing.
And literally, your approval of that saying makes complete sense to me. But there's this context now where it's frowned upon.
Do you know where I have, like, for example, hiking around? So in my I'm now in Mount Airy and walking around or taking hikes around and take on, you know, these long walks. I will encounter people and it's wonderful because I'll say, you know, good afternoon to you, sir. Like I'm finding much more, at least as I'm out and about, I'm finding more engaged, earnest interaction because the thing I can't stand is good afternoon or I'm walking past someone and they don't even nothing, not a look, not a response, not a grunt. I'd almost prefer if they took a swing at me just to let me know it registered.
You should go on a bike ride with me and my cousin because he greets everybody as we pass by. And when they don't say anything back, he's like, well, it was nice to talk to you. Hey, good to see you too.
I don't do
he
that.
He gets so frustrated. Well, I mean, we're also at this point, you know, 50 yards past them. Yeah.
Some of it depends on the other person. And they may not be cold. They may be suspect of a stranger and somebody wanting to take advantage of them. You know what I mean?
They could be the Golden State Killer.
Why
would you want to say you're welcome to that person?
That's right.
Yeah, you're terrible.
So
whether you open the door for me or not,
but I'm the same way. I'm like, and you know, if I say something and nobody responds, I'm like, and nice to see you, you know, or something along those lines.
I do it.
But
you're gonna pay.
They'll all pay.
They'll all pay.
I have not heard this thing about you're welcome though.
Yeah, it was just an article that I read, and I found it interesting because I find myself not saying it because it's you're welcome for what I just did for you.
Really?
Or maybe
of reading that, you don't say it now? Or
I find myself not saying it.
Because of that article.
You don't say you're welcome?
No, I think prior to the article, I think reading the article sort of affirmed what I had suspected about myself, was that I just don't say it as much anymore because of people's reaction to it. Which, again, which is crazy.
It
shouldn't be that way, but...
But it's the way you react.
Yeah. That's
interesting. Now, what do you think about my pleasure, like they say at Chick-fil-A?
I think that's nice.
Is that nice?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that.
But isn't it, though, well, of course I got pleasure out of that.
Right, you've got a boner.
I've satisfied me. I don't know about you.
It's okay. You gave me a boner.
You know, so it's only a matter of time before somebody sees it as that.
Yes.
Maybe.
I'm wet.
Thank you.
I'm wet.
Yeah.
Excuse me?
What?
No, it's just... I'm running like a faucet.
Yeah.
My erotic juices are flowing liberally, is what I meant to say.
Someone use that today, please. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I'm wet.
I'm wet.
And then the cops show up. You have to explain that you were induced to do so by the President's Tea Show.
I'm going to go to Bill. Hi, Bill. Good morning.
Hey, Preston, you're on the air. How you guys doing?
He turned the tables on you.
That's great. Good.
You're welcome. What's up, Bill?
I had read a similar article, probably not the same one that Nick was referring to, but it was more along the lines of an older generation taking offense to the younger generation not saying you're welcome when they were saying thank you.
Okay.
A lot of things, just kind of the younger generation more, it was implied that we should be doing what we're doing. You don't need to thank us for it. And you're saying, not instead of saying you're welcome, just, oh, no problem, or that's okay, or no sweat, like, you know, implying, like, it's not something you need to be grateful for, I'm just doing it because I should be doing it.
Yeah, you know, it's weird you say, because I have said, no problem, or you know, even my pleasure might come naturally to do that, but you're welcome is kind of the get it all done,
yeah,
you know, phrase, but we're all... I'm just happy to get a response if I extend a courtesy to someone... And they say thank you or just acknowledge the effort in whatever way.
Sure.
It's just a common civility dictates you do that.
Yeah.
I think the whole thing is more or less just people looking too much into, you know, there's not really a reason to be upset about it. Just
you're right.
Someone saying something, they're trying to be pleasant and polite about it. Just be happy that they're being nice.
Oh, well, what is that supposed to mean?
And that, but that's what a lot of people are. What is that? You can't just say this.
Oh, what are you thanking me for? Oh, I see what you're saying.
I said I was wet.
Yeah. That's like sometimes if somebody will sneeze, I'll just go, well, what the hell is that supposed to be?
One of the confounding things if someone's crying, it's one of my favorites. What's so funny? Why are you laughing?
What?
Crying.
Let me go to Mike. Hey, Mike, good morning.
Hey, guys, what's going on?
Yo, bud, just chatting with you, Mike.
All right, so I think the reason that people are so, like, getting angry about the you're welcome thing is because when people used to not thank you at all, like when you would hold the door for someone,
mm-hmm.
I feel like people used to always go, oh, you're welcome.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Use a sarcastic tone.
Yeah, that sarcasm on the voice where if you just say, like, oh, no problem or something like that, like,
no, I can hear. I hear what you're saying.
Same thing would happen with that phrase, though, Mike. If you open the door and they don't say anything, it's thank you, and then you go,
oh, it's no problem.
You know, so
yeah.
So it's any kind of response, and you know, I was trying to explain. Thank you for the call, by the way. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I'm wet.
You're welcome. I was trying to explain to my kids the other day because I guess I haven't trained them of this courtesy, and that's what it is, a courtesy when someone sneezes to say bless you.
Yeah.
If you think about it, it's kind of dumb.
Yeah.
Because I think it goes back to when there were illnesses like, you know, the plague or the Black Death or something like that. When you would sneeze, legitimately, someone would be, oh, I pray that you don't get sick and God bless you. I hope that you're not going to get this illness and die. I think that that's the origin of it. And now, if you really think of it on a surface level, why acknowledge someone sneezing at all anyway?
I got bronchitis.
You know what I mean?
I feel like I
do it, and I'm teaching my kids to do it just because it's a common courtesy that we have. But the root of it is kind of silly.
Yeah, but it's so much of it is. But it's just there are kind of things that, you know, it's nice to, you know, my wife will give
but
me.
Why? I mean, like we all sort you of, did was sneeze.
You and I will do the.
If you yawn, nobody says anything.
I know. But it's like one or two sneezes, and then she breaks formation. And we, you know, okay, if you're going to a sneezing fit, you're not going to say, God bless you, God bless you. But some people feel that they need to do it. I don't know.
You get two bad breath issues, and then I'm done.
I always apologize when I sneeze.
Yeah.
I say excuse me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you do sneeze and no one says bless you, you're like, a-hole.
Well, that's why
you know what I mean? I'm the same way. I'm like, why?
Son of a bitch.
God, I'm not wet at all.
I'm dry as a Bonneville salt flats down there, this root prick.
I think now it's just like, oh, well, I notice you, you know? You sneeze.
What are we, Navi?
I acknowledge your existence.
I see you.
That's
and then we hook our ponytails up and have blue kitty cat sex.
But I had realized that I hadn't really instilled that in my kids. And so the other day I was like, you know, guys, if somebody sneezes, you should say, bless you. It's considered a courtesy.
Shut up, old man.
I know exactly, right?
Yeah, the devil. Yeah, so that the demons don't attack us, right, you old fool?
Yeah. All right, anyhow, maybe if you haven't noticed that, and they say that they don't necessarily train them at Chick-fil-A to say my pleasure, but it's kind of implied and people kind of pick up on it. I've never noticed it.
Neither have I, and I love Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, I do too. All right, anyhow, that's the noticer. We got to take a break because Jason Reitman's going to be here.
Yes!
In just a moment.
Yep,
he'll be in our studio in a little bit. The movie Tully is coming out this weekend, so we're going to talk to him about
great
that.
Reviews.
This 93.3 WMMR audio on demand program returns after a brief word from our sponsors.
This Mother's Day, brighten Mom's Day with a Hand and Stone Massage and Facial Spa gift card. Visit handandstone.com or one of their over 50 locations in Delaware, South Jersey, Philadelphia, including the Lehigh Valley.
Celebrate all the sweet loves in your life with Stephen's brand new Sweet Love 24-karat gold dip rose for just $59. It's a beautiful lavender rose that reminds your sweet love just how much they mean to you. Don't miss out. Get yours now at IHateStevenSinger.com.
This is the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Your next guest has been at the helm of some really great movies over the years. He's got another one that he's promoting, opens on Friday, but you know him from movies like Up in the Air and Thank You for Smoking and Juno, just to name a few. Please welcome Mr. Jason Reitman to our show this morning. Hi, Jason.
Pleasure to be here.
Nice to see you. We got to cover this. First of all, we had an injury that we saw right from the get-go on your right hand there. Yeah. Horrific figure skating accident.
Well, I'll tell you what happened, actually.
Was it a figure skating accident?
Well, what happened was I said thank you to somebody.
Son of a bitch.
And I'm just waiting.
Yeah.
And moment goes by. No, you're welcome. And
you co-cocked him,
now
you?
I can't use my right hand.
No, you have a daughter that you took ice skating, right?
Yeah, we went to that rink in New York at Rockefeller.
And, oh, you did? Okay.
I used to play hockey very poorly. It's funny, I actually used to play in that Bruckheimer League out in Hollywood.
Really?
Yeah. There's like,
oh, all the celebs would play that.
Like,
yeah.
They have some pro hockey players. And
Alan Thicke.
It's the closest I've ever come to death is playing on the ice with professional hockey players. And I remember their nickname for me was Thank You for Not Skating. But I went skating with my daughter, and of course they only have figure skates, and I completely forgot about the toe pick.
The toe pick.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Things we do for our kids.
And I'm 40 now, and I think I could have taken that fall a few years ago, but...
Well, no. that sort of speaks to a lot of what is happening in the movie Tully. You have Charlize Theron, who's a mom who's, you know, has a couple of kids. One of them very young, but she's still breastfeeding. And there's just, now I don't have any children, but I've been surrounded by people who have, you know, who have been going through the throes of this and the sleep deprivation and all this stuff.
She's just overwhelmed.
Just overwhelmed in ways that I can scarcely comprehend. And I think as not being, you know, not biologically able to be a mom, there's a whole other level to that. And so it's the way that she sort of deals with it. And this sort of Mary Poppins-like character comes into her existence, Tully.
What is that like for you when all the rest of them are having kids? Are you laughing or are you envious?
I'm envious in some ways, but I'm barren, actually. No.
Well, that's funny.
No, it's actually, I see it in some ways. It's funny you should bring that up. One thing I do connect to, I was reading an interview with you about this, and particularly Ron Livingston's relationship with Charlize Theron as the married couple. And you hit on something that I never heard anybody say in an interview, but it's true. It's easier to depict the beginning stages of a relationship on film than to really project accurately like a long-term marriage, because there are little subtleties that start to occur between a husband. I've been married 21 years, mm-hmm. And you're right, but I've never heard anyone address it that way. There are these little things that occur and that you were thrilled with the way they were able to bring that to their portrayal, correct?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's moments where marriages and relationships just go quiet.
Yeah.
And, you know, you wind up in bed with, you know, just two iPads sitting there, you know, yeah. Either doing the crosswords together or, you know, playing some video game against each other or against other people.
Right.
And that seldom is portrayed accurately on screen.
Right.
The other tricky part, frankly, is, you know, finding someone to be in a relationship with Charlize on screen that is believable and appropriate. And I think the trick is finding someone who makes her laugh.
So you, it was what, New Year's Eve, and I think, as the story goes, Diablo Cody sends you an email, and she's got the script attached to it. You read it, and you fall in love with it, and then you just immediately send it to Charlize Theron?
Yeah, it started even 6 weeks prior to that when she gave me a call, and Diablo said, I have this idea for a movie, and she told it to me in two sentences. And then 6 weeks later, there was a screenplay, which is really the infuriating part.
Well, you worked with her. I mean, she's, you know, actually one of our great embarrassments on the show here is you came in mm-hmm. with Diablo Cody years ago. And we were more, we hadn't done our due diligence. And we were just more fascinated with the fact that she had been a stripper at some point and had a little.
Well, he's getting into
a
successful Hollywood career.
And here she is, this incredible script writer that that she's become. And you and she seem to really synergize really well. I mean, you know, so when you get a script from her, you just automatically, I see this.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm imagine it's like when you guys met for the first time, you don't realize when you're on a first date of a relationship that's going to last the rest of your life.
Right.
And I met her for the first time, and we went to this bar in L.A., and she ordered a dirty martini, and I got a Diet Coke, because I am the rock and roll of that relationship. And
Diet Coke.
And what has begun is, you know, this relationship where every 5 years we make a movie. It was Juno, and then Young Adult, and now Tully, and I'm looking forward to see the movies we make when we're in our 70s. You know, our hospice comedy is going to be amazing.
Because you are, have said in interviews, her tone and her take on things is changing, as is yours. And now you're a family man yourself, but her ability to write females that and people in general, but females that are flawed and relatable is uncanny.
Yeah, and look, I think there's kind of a through line between all three films that she's able to write about this idea of not knowing where you're supposed to be in your own timeline.
Yeah.
We always feel like we're either a little too early or a little too late, or somehow we missed the on-ramp to something that we're supposed to be in. And
we all feel that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what they're... Juno is about growing up too quickly, and Young Adult's about growing up a little too slowly. And this one, Tully, is about that moment when you become a parent and you realize you have to grow up because your younger self is starting to feel like it's a different human being.
Yeah.
In fairness, when you guys came in that time and we talked about her being a stripper,
you guys feel really guilty about this.
Well, we kid you not. We referenced this. It actually redirected the trajectory of the show because we said, we got to check up on these people.
Here's why. Because Juno was such a great piece of work. And I think afterwards we're like, holy crap, we missed the boat on talking to her about her writing ability because Juno turned out to be so good. So it did serve as a lesson
how odd that a woman came on a show and she was objectified for her beauty and her history and never talked about her talent. That what an odd moment.
We've gotten better though. So
we hadn't seen her talent.
Yes.
And I suppose Jason, you probably dealt with this a lot of your life as well, because you know you come from Hollywood royalty and
because of my stripping background.
You were a stripper.
Yeah. And
you used to do that skating act.
You did burlesque for like 5 or 6 years. No, because you have a reputation because you're a family. And you've had to prove in yourself on your own merits, you know? And has that been difficult for you?
You know, my obituary will either begin, director of Juno died today, or son of director of Ghostbusters died today.
Do you know, but to that point, though, we were saying before you came in, you have, obviously, Ivan Reitman, your dad, legendary. But your style of filmmaking is very different. I think you said they were asking you for the longest time if you were going to make Ghostbusters 3, and you said it'd be a very chatty movie about ghosts and different.
There'd be no busting. It'd just be people talking about ghosts.
Right. But that's you found your voice very quickly. I think where some people might have just said, I'm going to kind of follow tonally what, you know, my father's been doing. And did you always have that in your mind? What kind of movies?
You know, there was a moment in the 90s when all these really cool independent films started coming out of Sundance, like Pulp Fiction and Clerks, and all these directors like Paul Thomas Anderson and Sofia Coppola and Spike Jonze. And that was the moment I knew I wanted to be a director.
Okay.
And it was shortly after that I found this book, Thank You for Smoking. And I went, that's who I want to be. That's the director I want to be.
But the movies are, there's such a clear voice to it, and they can be amusing, but they always resonate as real. And in this case, it really got real for Charlize Theron. We heard she packed on about 40, 50 pounds,
mm-hmm.
and she's been very honest about saying that during the movie she feels she wasn't a joy to be around because she started to go into a depression, which I guess served her character in the movie. But was she a joy to be around, or was she?
She's always a joy to be around. I mean, I'll never, you know, the moment I met Charlize. And I really didn't know what to expect. The first thing she did was she told me a really dark joke, and I mean, it was filthy. And at that moment, I went, "Oh, she's one of us."
Yeah.
And
that's
just
cool.
Kind of fell for her art, and she's just always making everyone laugh.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Jason Reitman, and the film is Tully, which is in theaters on Friday. I want to ask about something you tweeted out a couple of weeks ago. No, it's nothing bad. You'd written, Touchdown in Atlanta, excited for a screening tonight and the masterclass tomorrow. Spoiler alert, it will mostly be a lecture on Matthew Broderick, Ferris/election continuum.
Right.
I have to ask what your theory is on that.
Well,
because I love both of those movies.
I'm a huge Ferris Bueller fan.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And I'm a huge Election fan.
Election is such a great movie.
One of the most overlooked movies and one of the most hilarious it's satirical
brilliant.
Movies. Yeah, it's brilliant.
And its director, Alexander Payne, is, you know, one of my filmic heroes. So here's the thing. Watch Ferris Bueller. I mean, watch Ferris Bueller and then immediately thereafter watch Election. And instead make the connection that Ferris Bueller, whose whole thing was about ditching school because he could look and see that we were all dying inside. That's the, I think the theory inside Ferris is that when you become an adult, you die. And if you go in with that theory, you start to see it everywhere. Cameron is actually dying right in front of us as he becomes an adult too soon. And that's how the adults are portrayed. The heartbreaking thing is if you watch Election thereafter and you presume that Ferris ends up being a teacher and being locked in school for the rest of his life.
Wow. So are you saying that's sort of karma on Ferris's?
I just wanted to show up this morning and depress your listeners.
Is
that ruin the rest of your day. Happy 50th birthday, guys. That is my gift to you.
That is depressing. But he's so hilariously... if you've never seen the movie, you won't understand. But it's a horrible existence, you know, Election. But for Ferris to become that is, I don't know if I want to live in that world.
But this is the reason why I love Alexander Payne and his movies like Sideways and Election is he's doing what I'm always trying to do, which is I think there's two reasons you go to the movies, and one is to escape. You go to see a Marvel movie, and it's awesome, and it's big, and it's a world you've never seen. And then there's other kinds of movies where you go, and the screen becomes a mirror.
Uh-huh.
And you see yourself in it.
Yep.
And,
yes.
It's a different type of transcendent experience to see movies like Little Miss Sunshine or The Full Monty or movies where you suddenly see yourself. And Ferris Bueller and Election are both like that for me.
Yeah, they kind of give you a pause for thought. And in the greatest movies like that and in your own work, you know, you'll walk out and they live with you for a little bit. There's nothing wrong with the big popcorn movie. We loved Infinity War, but the... you know, something that can live with you for a little bit is more impactful. So
I went and saw two movies this weekend. Okay. I saw Avengers on Saturday, but on Friday I saw A Quiet Place with John Krasinski.
How amazing is that movie?
And you know what? I brought my 8-year-old daughter because I was like, PG-13, it's probably going to be okay. It was amazing.
Yeah.
I loved every second of it, but I wanted to ask about John Krasinski because you directed two episodes of The Office.
Yeah, I've known John for a while. I was so impressed with him as a director.
And it's what's funny is people are like, oh, man, I can't believe he's had this career, you know, because he was in, 13 Hours and
where he and Michael Bay got together and started their thing.
And he wrote and co-wrote and directed this.
Yeah, but I'm not surprised because he has got such a likable face, first of all. And then
that's,
you know,
what was going to make him a good director.
No.
You have one as well. I'm talking about his acting.
Photos of like Kubrick and Scorsese. These are not livable looking human beings.
I'm talking about him as an actor, and I'm not talking about his directing or writing or producing or anything.
This guy's going to be a good director.
But I wanted to ask you about your experience directing him and The Office, and then I also want to follow up with.
how you go about directing an episode of Saturday Night Live.
Got it. Well, hey, if you haven't seen A Quiet Place, you need to. And look, actors come up to me all the time and be like, I want to direct. And the first thought that goes in my mind is, oh, God, this is not going to turn out well. But,
right,
right. But Krasinski completely crushed it on a film where no one's allowed to talk, except you have to explain all this stuff that you normally do in a science fiction film. Usually there's a doctor character or a scientist who goes, well, what we learned about the aliens was this. And they explain all the stuff. And you're like, oh, now I know what to do in this movie.
Yeah.
They can't talk in that movie, so you have to find another way, and he does all this visual storytelling, and it's totally badass.
I'm dying to see it, but I will freak out if there is noise in the theater, and I'm trying to find that perfect screening because I want to get it exactly
right. It's
not
a silent film, so that's the thing you have to understand.
It's not like a Chaplin film.
Not a Chaplin film. Yeah.
Sped up with a piano playing in the back?
Yeah, there is a score to the film, so there's music, and there's tense things going on with that, and then obviously there's just the ambient sound and what's going on. So I don't think a crinkle of a popcorn thing is going to bug you that much.
Well, you know me.
I'm a freaking
lunatic. As I expect the theater to be quiet.
I did not direct SNL, by the way. I did a sketch on SNL. We made a deal once where they let me come in and be a writer there for a week if I were to direct a sketch in return. And
For me,
it was like going to space camp. My two dreams as a kid were direct movies and write at SNL. And I got to do that for a week, and that was extraordinary. Wow.
I want to go back to Ferris Bueller real quick because did you ever see the special on I think it was A&E. There was originally the movie was like 4 hours long.
Really?
Yeah. And there was a whole backstory with Charlie Sheen, and his dad was the tow truck driver that takes the principal's car at the end of the movie.
Oh, my God. I'd love to see this cut.
Well, all right. So, which leads me to my question. Like, there were two other kids in the family that they completely edit out entirely.
Breakfast Club is like that, too.
Yeah.
There's all this other stuff. They had, like, dream sequences of what the kids were dreaming about while they were sleeping. And the principal, at one point, goes to the swimming pool, and there's a teacher there, and they have a romance, too.
What?
Yeah.
See, that would not have been good. We needed him to be as one note as he was in the movie.
I want it like Marvel. I want the John Hughes expanded universe.
Yeah.
I want
more.
50 hours of that.
Right. Yeah. And so in retrospect, looking back on it 30 years later, you can say that. But how hard is it for you to edit down movies to get it to where you want it to be? Because this movie, Tully, is only like an hour and a half long, which compared to Avengers Infinity Wars is a really short movie.
Yes, but I think still worth the price of the ticket.
Absolutely.
I'm not judging it based on...
You're going to buy the
seat.
That'd
be great if all the review was that, you'll find that you'll be in your car 90 minutes later. But
size doesn't always matter.
I'm going to leave that aside. But I think cutting the movie... I grew up in editing rooms. I grew up... my father's a filmmaker. I grew up on sets, but I grew up mostly in editing rooms. And he was ruthless with my work, from when I was a kid, and he graded, he reviewed my essays the way he reviews his screenwriters,
script.
Wow. So I learned to cut real quick, and the joy of editing it down to what's good.
That, to me, they say filmmaking is editing and getting down to, what the essentials are in it. But as a creator, that's got to be, you got something that you just love, but you have to just keep whittling it down to the essentials. You talked about about acting and Krasinski, but you've appeared in a couple.
Walk-ons.
Right?
I don't like where this is going.
Yeah, give us some of your. We would know you were in Ghostbusters too.
Oh my God!
And Twins.
I know where you're going, so I'm just going to jump to it. My first kiss was in one of my father's movies.
No.
Yeah.
And relay the story? Yeah.
Yeah, it was in Kindergarten Cop. There's a moment where Schwarzenegger's going through the school at the end, and the school's on fire, and he kicks open a door, and I'm there making out with a girl.
Yeah.
And he's like,
get out of here.
And I say, I thought it was another fire drill. And
oh my God.
My dad one morning was like, hey, I want you to be in the movie. And then, a moment later, my dad was directing my first kiss.
Were you mortified? Were you?
We did like 8 takes.
I mean, that's pretty cool if your dad can broker your first kiss, right?
I mean, I think that happened. I was going to make a bad joke. What's weirder is him telling you, is like my father telling me, I mean, don't be afraid to get in there and like really kiss, and then walking out and the whole cruise giving you, high fives. It was weird.
Does that set a bad precedent? So they're like on your honeymoon night, you're like, Dad, what do I do?
No, it was more to say, I go, you know, go to my girlfriend after and be like, so my dad had some notes.
In Tully, as you're directing Charlize Theron and you're directing all these people, are you the kind of director that lets them sort of play in the role? Is there room for any improvisation or you know, because you have a great screenwriter, you know, how do you find the happy medium?
I mean, look, I'm really lucky. I get to work with brilliant actors like this one. You know, I get to work with not only Charlize, but like Mark Duplass, who's amazing.
He's great.
Ron Livingston is amazing. Mackenzie Davis is just outstanding. And I always say on the first take, don't say anything, because you'll never get someone's instincts again once you tell them what to do. And then it depends on who you're working with. I mean, like a guy like Patton Oswalt, let him go. I mean,
yeah,
who
yeah.
knows what he's going to do? He's going to be absolutely brilliant, and he's going to just make you look smarter.
So you're working on a film about Gary Wright, correct?
Gary Hart.
Gary Hart, I mean, Gary Wright. Gary Hart. And that's a fascinating story, because that was, you know, the scandal that mm-hmm. surrounded him. And it predates social media. It predates right. so much of what now would have blown that off. I mean, it was huge to begin with. You can only imagine what it would have been like today. Would it have been less of a thing or more of a thing? You know, when it went, are you focusing in on obviously all of that scandal, the Donna Rice stuff? And
of course, that was the moment where gossip journalism and political journalism drove into the same lane for
that
the first
was it.
Time, and they never seemed to get back out.
Never.
It was
yeah.
the same summer as mm-hmm. the Tammy Faye Baker scandal. It was the same summer as Fawn Hall and Oliver North. And look, I'll be honest. I'm young enough that I really didn't know the story until I heard a Radiolab episode about it. And it fascinated me, and I just immediately drew a line in connection with where we are today, and I wanted to make a movie about it.
What's so interesting is I remember that Gary Hart, who was running for re-election, I guess, at the time, or running for...
Well, he was a senator running for president.
Running for president, and he actually put out the edict. He challenged the press, try to find something on it.
I know, and by the way, it's a common misconception of yeah. what happened, and one of the things we're trying to do in the movie is kind of set the story straight a little bit.
So that was not as was reported.
I mean, not only was it an offhanded remark, that article where he said that came out the same weekend as the article about him meeting someone. So what happened was, after the fact, TV News conflated the two and said, oh, well, look, he asked them to follow him around, and the truth was the reporters were already following him around, and then it was used as evidence after the fact.
Okay, so he got caught in that
scandal. Sorry, I don't mean to, like, kill.
No,
I'll give you another weird one. That photo, the famous photo,
yeah.
came out half a year later.
Really?
Everyone remembers it happening simultaneously.
The person
who sold it after the fact.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's called The Front Runner. Great looking cast. Obviously, Hugh Jackman's going to be in as Gary Hart, but Vera Farmiga, who you've worked with in Up in the Air.
Oh, my God, she's brilliant.
She's fantastic.
And she's amazing in the movie.
J.K. Simmons was in that film as well.
I know. Tully is my first film without J.K. Simmons.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I love that guy.
It's deeply upsetting. And, you know, I also produced Whiplash, and I produced Jennifer's Body. So yep. I have a you know, this deep relationship with J.K. Simmons. He's oddly my muse, and I'm very yeah.
He's just so versatile.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, you know that there was a moment in New York when J.K. Simmons was simultaneously the head of the Aryan Nation on Oz,
yeah,
and Guys and Dolls on Broadway.
I didn't know he was in Guys and Dolls.
Can you imagine?
But I always go back to that character from Oz. And
what is
I...
that day of work like? Like, you show up in the morning, they draw on your swastika, and that night you're putting on a zoot suit.
May I suggest to you your next project after this film is the Aryan Nation Guys and Dolls. Yeah. I think that would work out
People
nicely.
People have been clamoring.
A nice twist.
Hey, yeah, I had asked the same question to Guillermo del Toro before The Shape of Water came out.
We're very similar directors.
Well,
name drop.
Well, I wanted to ask this because I asked him if he edits his own movie trailers. And he says sometimes he does and sometimes he doesn't. For The Shape of Water, he did. So for Tully, do you because you were talking about editing and stuff, do you like to take over that? Because that's what you present to the public.
It's interesting that you asked that, because the editor of Tully is a brilliant trailer editor. And
okay.
He's a brilliant film editor as well, but he also edited the trailer for The Force Awakens.
Oh, well, there you go.
So he's
Little Indie Film,
one of the best trailer cutters in the business.
That's an art in and of itself, because you've got to, you have the task of not revealing too much, but enough to draw the audience in and a snapshot of the film without giving too many plot points.
Oh, yeah. I mean, think about that Force Awakens trailer, and we all kind of know it. That was that first piece that came out that reinvigorated and got us all excited about the movie. It opened on that like landscape that we thought was Tatooine at the time. It turned out to be Jakku. Mm-hmm. And after a moment, you know, the guy jumps up. And it's, oh my God, there's a stormtrooper, but he seems to be scared. And it totally painted our version of, oh, what is this movie going to be? And that idea is not in the final movie.
Yeah,
no, that long shot where he's sitting on the sand for a long time, it's not like that long shot is in the movie. He came up with that idea to be sitting on that long shot, and they created it for the trailer. So there is real storytelling.
Let me ask you on that issue of stuff that is in the trailer that does not end up in the movie. Is that copacetic, or is that cheating?
You know, I don't mind it. I know people freak out. I know there was that whole Rogue One situation where they had the TIE fighter show up in that shot. I'm on the top of the tower that isn't in the movie.
Yeah.
I don't care. I mean, the trailer, for me, it sets a tone. It gets me excited. And
sometimes it bothers me, though, because it... If it's something that you remember and you get there, and I'm like, well, that never happened. Where is that?
That's interesting. Yeah. So for you, it's like looking at the McDonald's commercial where the Big Mac looks outstanding.
Right.
And
then you open the box. That. Well, like that's, especially if it's part of what drew me in to go see the movie. And then I'm like, well, it's not there.
Don't you ever feel like, oh, wow, I'm getting extra stuff because...
But you never do.
Well, the movie Benny and June, the trailer, had In Your Eyes by Peter Gabriel in it. And I love that song. I honestly went to see that movie because the song was in
the song and the commercial. I'll tell you.
How many times do you reference Benny and June on this show?
First time in a couple of years, yeah.
Well, they use the music from Aliens all the time in trailers. Yeah. It's a constant go-to, you know.
I have started to boycott, in a sense, the movie trailers, especially for the big blockbuster ones and series, like you use the Marvel universe as an example of that, because I don't want to know anything. I already know about the movie. I already know it's going to be great. I will wait, and I don't want any. I want it to be all surprises. That's a different animal, though. That's characters that you're familiar with, and you know, it's a
combination
line,
of multiple films.
But now movie trailers, the release of movie trailers, are becoming an event as well, and are being shared. And hey, the new trailer comes out tomorrow. You know?
What's the thing about? I don't get this. Why do they do that little mini trailer for the trailer?
It's a trailer for the trailer.
And they do a 5 second.
I hate the trailer for the trailer.
I work in this business, and I don't know who that's for. Do you need a 5 second trailer to convince you to watch the other trailer?
I know. Yeah.
No, you don't.
I don't know if I want to spend time in this trailer. Yeah, no, it's very weird. Now
this trailer,
now
worth
they
my
announce
while.
The teaser trailer as an event.
Oh, that's weird to me too.
And then the teaser trailer is an announcement of the longer trailer.
Yeah,
and it's just a
or there's like a commercial for the trailer, and then they do a commercial in front of the trailer, and it's like, why do I have to watch a commercial? I'm about to watch a commercial.
Right,
Jason, do you ever go to the theater any longer to get the full experience of what the viewers is doing these days?
I'm in a movie theater 2-3 times
okay,
a week.
Good.
I love to be. I mean, look, as a kid,
I still love going.
That's all I ever wanted to be. I just wanted to be in a movie theater, and I'll go to movies that I don't even really want to see just to buy the popcorn and sit in the theater for a while, watch the trailers.
Well, here's my pet peeve, because I went to see a movie yesterday, and the movie showtime was 4:00. I got there at 4:10 so we can get some popcorn, get in the seats, even though I had reserved seats. And we're sitting there, and I'm like, oh, great, man. The seat next to me is going to be open. This is fantastic. I have a little extra breathing room because we're halfway through the trailers.
Yeah.
And then, like, the last trailer before the movie starts, of course, three people come in, and they sit in the open seats next to me. Don't do that. Don't get my hopes up.
I know.
It said it started at 4. It's now 4:15.
What do they say?
Just
early is on time is late, and late is
unforgivable.
Well, what pisses you off more, someone sitting right next to you or someone sitting right in front of you?
I don't mind somebody sitting in front of me. I'm pretty tall, so it doesn't really bother me too much.
See, but I'm tiny. So.
I would go to great lengths. I can't have distraction, stuff being opened up, milk duds. And I kid you not, earlier on, and I would sometimes buy a thing of water or soda and pour it on the seats in front of me. Just so
you're a sadist.
I am a sadist. Because I've never heard
in the 20 years we've been doing the show together, I've never heard that.
I would do that on this.
Who does that?
I did it when I wanted to make sure that I saw Barry
Lyft. But also, it's not like... it's not one of those things when that you can see the water in the seat and go, oh, there's water in the seat.
But people always sit. They always
have to sit down to figure that out.
It doesn't matter. Because when they come in, they put their hands on the seat.
Aren't you shocked that he doesn't have kids, Jason?
It's just part of the deal. Yeah. My dad taught me to do that. Maybe he didn't teach me. He suggested it might be a good thing.
I think you should warn the people. Say, hey, oh, you know what? Somebody tried to sit there earlier. And, and there's
sweat. I pissed on those seats.
While we have you here, since we're talking about movies, besides Quiet Place and Tully, can you recommend something that's small, art housey that maybe we haven't seen yet?
Or big.
Okay.
Because you're clearly a genre fan.
Have you guys watched Wild Wild Country yet?
No.
On Netflix.
Oh, my God.
It's this crazy cult.
And I know I shouldn't be, like, pushing Netflix.
I know. I've heard about it, though.
Movie theaters, but
is it great?
Wild Wild Country is amazing.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, who's in that?
No. It's a documentary.
It's a six-part documentary on this cult that moved into a small town in Oregon.
Oh. They took the town over. Like,
and it is amazing.
We like cult stuff.
It's amazing. It's really good.
Okay. Are you a big documentary fan?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Yeah, when they're done well, they're phenomenal.
Yeah,
yeah. So this is all right. I'll have to check that out.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. All right. Well, listen, we would like to remind everyone that the film Tully is going to be in theaters on Friday, and you should definitely get out and see this movie. And it's a great cast, and obviously, Jason knows a thing or two about the business. Many great movies over the years.
Did we correct the first interview and anything, Preston?
I think we made good.
No, not until. Like, by the way, this is typical chauvinism. You've corrected it with me and not the woman you offended.
No, I know. But you were part of it. We've got 50%.
Am I just supposed to send her an email and say that you guys are sorry?
Yes. No, yes, please. She was actually, she was enjoying, she was having a good time, she was having fun. Yeah. But we do owe her a good one, too, because we're huge fans of her her work.
Yeah, we are sorry.
But you're right.
We're very sorry.
We are cads.
You feel really contrite.
We are cads.
Could you terrible. So thank you.
You're welcome.
That's awesome.
And shout out to Trey, who drove me over here and listens to you guys every morning and adores you.
Thanks so much, man.
We appreciate it.
Maybe he remembers that horrible
Jesus. You have a real problem.
Who was he? I thought this guy.
We thought it was. Oh, no, Trey.
That's Dane.
Oh,
what's up, Dane? How are you? All right. Jason, thank you for coming by.
It's fluid.
Appreciate it. Jason Reitman, guys. The movie is Tully. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
MMR's 50th birthday concert series presents MMRBQ 2018, our annual all-day rock festival. Saturday, May 19th, BB&T Pavilion, starring Alice in Chains. Ghost. Stone Temple Pilots. Jonathan Davis, GA Performances from the Record Company, Dorothy, Radkey, and In the Presence of Wolves.
Presale alert. Get the official concert t-shirt now and guarantee you get the size you want. Offer ends May 1st in the Rock Shop at WMMR.com. Tickets on sale now. Just $35 to put your ass in the grass.
MMRBQ 2018. Don't miss it.
I just made a mess in my mouth.
All right.
Let's get to the Bizarre File.
Now, WMMR presents Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
And it is sponsored by Skull Shaver. Attention, bald guys. Shave your head in less than 90 seconds. And say goodbye to nicks and cuts and scrapes with the all-new Pitbull from Skull Shaver. And you can use promo code BALD at skullshaver.com for exclusive discounts. So the family of a South Carolina woman, this is a terrible story, who died in April of 2016 on a Dallas-bound American Airlines flight, has filed a wrongful death suit against the airline. And I can see why. The parents of Brittany Oswell, who was only 25 at the time of her death, allege that the airline refused to divert the plane for an emergency landing despite a doctor's repeated recommendation that it do so.
It's my understanding they have to listen to the doctor.
And they failed to provide proper working medical equipment and supplies on the plane. Oswell and her husband, Corey, were flying home from Hawaii when a few hours into the flight, Brittany became dizzy and fainted. The doctor on board examined her once she regained consciousness and believed that the nurse was having a panic attack. But an hour to 3 hours later, as the plane flew over New Mexico, Brittany became violently ill, and it was at this point that the doctor examined Oswald again and told the flight crew to divert the plane to the nearest airport. The suit says the doctor, who was a passenger on the flight, told flight attendants three times to land at the nearest airport and spoke to both the captain and American Airlines on-call physician.
Huh.
With about 90 minutes left to Dallas-Fort Worth, the captain decided to just continue the rest of the scheduled flight rather than make an emergency landing.
So Dr. Mike was on a flight, and a guy passed out, and he revived him on the flight. He was there. Is there a doctor on board? And it was Dr. Mike. And he says that at that point, they landed at the closest hospital because, and he has, a doctor would have the right to say that.
You got to land this plane.
Yeah.
You got to land. About an hour before landing, Oswell stopped breathing. She never regained consciousness. She died at medical center 3 days later. Doctors say she suffered a blood clot in her lung.
That Jesus, that sucks.
The suit also alleged the medical equipment on board, including a defibrillator and a blood pressure monitor, was broken and unusable. So they are suing. I can understand. A furious fast foodie.
Furious fast foodie.
Flipped out. In a Staten Island Popeyes after she tried to order from a discount menu that you can only find at Wendy's.
Mm.
The woman ticked off the tirade.
Where's your Wendy's menu?
Which included slamming a chair through a window, was caught on tape. The frenzy began when the hot-headed customer tried to get food at the Popeyes. She wanted something off of the 4-for-4 menu, but soon learned that Popeyes doesn't have that menu. Wendy's, not Popeyes, offers 4-for-4.
Where's your pizza?
Then the woman ordered a meal anyway, sat down to eat, and had words with the employees on the way out. Security footage shows her stick her tongue out, wave her middle fingers in the air. I think Nick's done that before.
Yeah.
And swing a large poster board at the front door. For her finale, the woman picked up a chair and bashed it into the eatery's plate glass window, shattering it. So.
Uh-huh.
Cops describe her as being between 18 and 25 years old, and they're asking for people
look at this lunatic.
Any information to contact them. Yes.
We're watching this idiot at the wrong restaurant.
I only have one more story.
Are you kidding me?
Okay.
What the hell's going on here?
All right. I guess time-wise, we got to move it along. How about this? This is wild. A 7-year-old girl lost part of her leg to cancer, but she's determined that it won't stop her from dancing. She loves, her name is Amelia Eldred. She loves swimming, athletics, running, bike riding. She's vowed that she will dance again after she was diagnosed with osteosarcoma. And it's bone cancer, and it was in her left femur. After 5 grueling weeks of chemotherapy, followed by surgery to amputate the limb, the lower part of her leg was reattached backwards in a rare procedure called rotationplasty.
I've never heard of this.
To allow the ankle joint to work as a knee joint. So they basically attach her ankle to her knee, but backwards. And she will soon be able to use a prosthetic limb that her foot can slip into, and it will bend like a knee joint.
This is brilliant.
Isn't that wild?
So they can, so it'll bend the right way to use the prosthesis.
Yes. And so there's a picture of her with a foot on her left leg backwards. She told the BBC how she felt about the surgery. She said, it doesn't feel that different, but it is different when I have to move because it's the other way around. When I move it up or down or side to side, she said, I got the other way because it's the wong way around. So
she'll learn to use it.
Yes.
Her nerves will. It's almost like switching the controls on a PlayStation controller. Different axes.
The inverted controls, A scan has showed that her bones are fusing well together, and it's expected that she could have a prosthesis fitted in around 3 months' time. In that, I've never heard of that procedure before. Well, but apparently they can.
A miracle.
Do it. Yep. And there you go. That is what I have in the Bizarre File. Short Bizarre File. We'll make up for it tomorrow, and we'll get some other stories in for you. We got to take a break. We'll come back in just a second or two. Going to have a lesson question for you, see if you've been paying attention this morning. Some prizes in conjunction with that. Trash and music news. And, of course, it's Free Music Monday, too. Or New Music Monday, I should say. We'll be back in a moment.
93.3 WMMR.
Online.
On
demand. And on
the air. Including our digital HD signal. The best-sounding MMR there is. WMMR HD. And HD2. The MM Archives channel.
My eldest, youngest son, Carter, is really enamored with that band. And I'm very proud of that fact.
Oh, it's awesome.
And I was telling him yesterday, because a friend of his gave him an album, an actual album, some wax from Queen.
Oh, that's cool.
And I told him, and I hopefully I didn't miss state this because you know me and information.
like all of us.
But I believe every single member of that band has written a number one song.
Wow. Yes, one of the few bands where every member has written, if not one, multiple number one hits.
If you look on the back of any Queen album, so one song will say May, and another one will say Mercury, and another one will say Taylor, and another one will say Deacon. They wrote equally all these songs. Because, you know, Freddie's obviously the star of the band.
Yes.
But they were all and are massively talented individuals.
Well, I actually almost bought an album for it, because when I was at Q Mart in Quakertown a couple of weeks ago, it was on record store day, and I was going through, they had a little record store inside Q Mart, and I couldn't decide which one to get.
It's weird? One of the greatest hits albums doesn't include, they'll leave one major hit.
Sure.
And it's like, what the? I know. You sons of bitches.
Here, Nick pulled this up. So Freddie Mercury wrote Bohemian Rhapsody, Somebody to Love, Crazy Little Thing Called Love, and We Are the Champions. John Deacon wrote Another One Bites the Dust, arguably one of the most successful songs,
yeah,
whether or not. I Want to Break Free, and he wrote You're My Best Friend. Roger Taylor, the drummer, wrote Radio Gaga, A Kind of Magic, as well as These Are the Days of Our Lives. And then Brian May wrote Fat Bottom Girls, We Will Rock You, and Who Wants to Live Forever, amongst others. I mean, he wrote Hammer to Fall and a bunch of other ones, too.
So. Who wrote Presh, Under Pressure?
I don't know. I mean, that was a collaboration, so I'm not sure who has writing credit. And a few of them have multiple credits among them as well, which is what a great band.
And all that played when it was brand new.
Yeah.
Here at MMR.
Absolutely. 50 years, man. It's amazing. All right. So today, lesson question, we are going to give away a pair of tickets for A Night of Interactive Comedy. This is cool, man. Colin Mochrie and Brad Sherwood from Drew Carey's improv TV show, Whose Line Is It Anyway? They're playing this Friday at the new Excite Center at Parks Casino.
Oh, that's a great room.
I hope they get in early enough to where they can stop by and say hello, because I love those guys. Both of them are really talented. So the question that we have for you, we got to go with this. What's the new Preston and Steve way of responding to someone saying thank you? 215-263-WMMR. What is the new Preston and Steve show way of responding to someone saying thank you? 215-263-WMMR.
I hope this takes off.
I do too.
At least for today.
Nick, who wrote Under Pressure?
They give writing credits to Queen and David Bowie. So the whole band and Bowie.
All right. Good to know. All right, let's do the trash.
The trash business is a gold mine.
93.3 WMMR with Preston and Steve's Hollywood Trash.
All right, it's brought to you by Estrue. South Jersey sports specialty retailer. And you can visit them in Marlton or online at AISTRIU.com. What's going on, Steve?
Well, Dennis Rodman claiming he had a hand in the more favorable diplomatic situation between Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump. Rodman says he believes that one day North Korea will reunite with, quote, whatever the southern country is called.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Richard Gere says he's being extorted by former business partners who are working with him on a film called Bones of the Master, A Buddhist Monk's Search for the Lost Heart of China. Gere says the movie was supposed to be a meditation on Buddhism in communist China, while his partners wanted it to be more like The Hangover. And finally, Tom Brokaw firing back at Linda Vester, a former NBC employee who claims he sexually harassed her for 20 years. Brokaw says that's because of his slight speech impediment, reporter always sounds like Squirter.
Oh my God.
That's your Hollywood
word.
Well, all right.
No harassment there.
Go to the phones. What is the new Preston and Steve way of responding to someone saying thank you? And I'm going to go to Tiffany. Hi, Tiffany. Good morning.
Good morning, Gadzooks.
Gadzooks. All right, Tiffany, what's the new Preston and Steve way of responding to someone saying thank you?
I'm wet.
I'm wet, yes. You are correct. Hang on just a second. Tiffany, we are going to set you up with a pair of tickets for A Night of Interactive Comedy with comedians Colin Mochrie and Brad Sherwood from, of course, Drew Carey's improv show, Whose Line Is It Anyway? One night only, this Friday, 8 p.m. at the new Excite Center at Parks Casino. You go to parkscasino.com for tickets. You have to be at least 21. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Now, Preston and Steve's Music View on 93.3 WMMR. Yeah! Yeah!
And it's brought to you by Rita's Water Ice. Does it really feel like spring? It's finally warm out, so head to Rita's to cool off with a refreshing Italian ice made fresh daily or other amazing frozen treats that you can only find at Rita's. Billy Joe Armstrong has pushed back against fan speculation that the band could be breaking up following Armstrong's surprise release of the debut album for his new project called The Long Shot. Armstrong wrote at the latter act's Instagram account, "Some of you are asking about Green Day. And if there is anything wrong or if we're breaking up, the answer is no. I am having some fun with my friends. I am what you call a musician. Some people have a hard time calling it that sometimes. With that said, shut the F up. You're an effing whiner, and I'm playing music because that's what I'm supposed to do. That's what people that play guitar and drums and bass and they sing. This is what we do. So if you don't like it, then F off.
Wow.
And if you do like it, come along because it's a lot of fun, all right? Have a pleasant day." That's what he wrote. So I guess a lot of people were complaining, and he jumped on board just to shut them up a little
just
bit.
Just jibber-jabber.
Love is for Losers is the debut LP, and it arrived on April 20th along with a music video for the title track. The instrumental members of Tool have released a trailer for their upcoming music and clinic appearances that feature snippets of music from the new song Descending, which the group has been playing live over the last few years. The track is expected to appear on the band's long-awaited new album, which Tool has been tracking for the last month and a half. The music clinics will see drummer Danny Carey, bassist Justin Chancellor, and guitarist Adam Jones get live performances and offer fans the opportunity to meet them, have their photograph taken with them, and take part in a Q&A session. Mayor James Keenan will not participate in these events, and apparently a total of 8 clinics are scheduled. One of them here in Philadelphia on May 23rd.
And what does the clinic provide?
Syphilis
testing? Or?
No.
A music clinic.
It's a music clinic.
Okay.
So they will play, they'll perform, they'll talk, they'll
you have meet crabs.
And all that stuff. So collectible merchandise will also be on hand along with a display of rare Tool memorabilia, and tickets start from $500. And are
well,
now
F that.
Available, yeah.
And I like Tool. Well, first of all, I'm not a musician, so to go to a musician's clinic wouldn't make any sense.
I've been to a few clinics in my time. Most of the time, they're free.
Well, this is not free by $500.
Well, I guess not most of the time. But I've been to, I used to be invited to quite a few back when I was in the full-on, in a working band, and I was a regular at this drum shop.
They'd see you in there.
Well, they would invite me because I was there all the time. I was, purchasing stuff and I was just hanging around the store.
You're a working musician.
Hanging out with other drummers and so forth. So I would get invited to a lot of clinics, and I loved going to those.
Did you ever teach?
No, I was a terrible teacher.
Really? Okay.
Did not have the patience for it. Why can't you do this? I can do it. This is how you do it. Do it like that.
What are you, stupid?
I'm not a good teacher, and I never will be.
Make the guy in Whiplash look like.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Exactly.
Dead Poets Society.
I taught Kathy and Marissa a little bit. They were able to play a
bass. They hate you.
A bass drum.
You.
No.
I know. But anyway, and I don't know where this clinic is. I didn't get a chance to look up that information this
morning. We try to give as much information as we can.
We do. And sometimes I just don't feel like getting all the information for you.
F you.
Yeah. So maybe Nick will look it up.
Do some work.
No, they can look it up.
Clinic in Philadelphia. Oh, all right, anyhow. Keenan had revealed on Twitter last week that he had finished writing the lyrics and melodies for the follow-up to 2006's 10,000 Days, which the band is recording with producer Joe Barresi. Keenan wrote, "My work is done, waiting on them to track. Then I can finish. Can't track to the music that isn't recorded." So he lets them go in and do everything, and then he adds his part to it afterwards.
It's got to be kind of wild. To have that,
completed
songs and you just kind of attach words to them?
Yeah, you know who kind of works in that way?
Neil Peart?
I didn't know. No, not Neil Peart. Steven Tyler.
Really?
I remember seeing some stuff of them in studio. And although he would have say on how the music would go, he would wait until the track was done to put the lyrics into place.
Huh.
Which I found kind of interesting. It looks like, I don't see any dates for
There's no dates in Philadelphia.
It's May 23rd.
Yeah.
At 8 p.m. at the Fillmore.
Oh, it's going to be the Fillmore.
Yeah, and you were right about the price. $500 each, and it's GA tickets, but the information is up on LiveNation.com.
But that comes with a box, lunch, and a glow stick.
Oh, well, that's good to have.
Only one.
Yeah. The Pretty Reckless, Pop Evil, Hailstorm, and other rock acts are mourning the death of producer, engineer, and mixer Kato Kondwala. who had passed away last Wednesday from injuries sustained in a motorcycle accident.
Not familiar.
Singer Taylor Momsen of the Pretty Reckless wrote in a lengthy statement that Kwandwala had changed the entire direction of her life, adding, "He was our ringleader, our confidant, my best friend, my family, my musical soulmate. Nothing's going to be the same without him." He's produced all three albums that they have done while working with such acts as Breaking Benjamin, Papa Roach, Drowning Pool, Paramore, My Chemical Romance, and many others. So he had his hands in a lot of music.
She's had a couple of hard hits when
Chris Cornell died.
Chris Cornell died.
Ripped her apart.
Devastated.
Lizzie Hale said, "You burn bright, and that light will never be lost on us. My heart also goes out to Cato's family and loved ones in this hard time." He's only 47 years old. And survived by his mother and two daughters. So that's sad news. Imagine Dragons frontman Dan Reynolds has revealed that he has split with his wife of 7 years.
Uh-oh.
Musician Asia Volkman. Reynolds wrote, "After 7 beautiful years together, Asia and I's marriage has come to an end. Our children continue to be the most important thing in our lives, and we will continue to co-parent them with all our love. I ask that you please respect our privacy at this time as we work through this as a family." They married in 2011. They have three daughters together. Mm. Five-year-old Arrow. It's a cool name. And one-year-old twins Coco and Gia.
Coco.
Gaga.
I saw her. Coco. It's good.
Paul Stanley revealed on Friday that Kiss would be embarking on a major tour in 2019 while promoting his ongoing art exhibitions on CNBC. The star child let the news out that Kiss will be ramping up again with a string of dates in the new year. He said, "A major Kiss tour, I would say, starts in January, but it hasn't been announced yet, so don't tell anybody." And he laughed and he said, "Actually, success is initially easy. Sustaining success over the long haul is something that's very challenging. So at this point, we're 40 years in and 100 million albums sold, so we've done quite well." So Kiss on a major tour next year.
Do you know where they pop up in? They pop in that, it's that movie with James Franco, Why Him?
Yes.
They do?
Yeah, so they're big Kiss fans, and it's actually really funny because at the end, he's trying to, you know, propose to this girl that he's in love with, and Bryan Cranston's the father, and
yep.
He's kind of like a startup, an app developer who's made millions and millions and millions, and he has Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons there in full makeup. And there's a scene later on in the house where they're in the party and they're up at the buffet table in the full out.
Oh, my God.
But it's actually very funny.
That's great. All right, now I'm throwing this one last story in here because this is kind of interesting. ABBA has reunited in the studio for its first new songs in over 35 years.
Whoa.
According to The Independent last week.
Mamma mia.
It was reported that members of ABBA, Agnetha Falkskog.
Yes.
Annie Fried Lyngstad.
Yes.
Bjorn Alveus and Benny Andresen had agreed to let computerized versions of themselves appear on a televised tribute later this year. Bjorn said it's kind of an ABBA tribute show, but the centerpiece will be something I call avatars. It's digital versions of ABBA from 1979. It's the first time that it's ever been done. With videos and lip syncing, they'll create digital copies of us. In order to create the avatars, techno artists from Silicon Valley measured the heads of the four ABBA members and photographed them from all angles. And the band issued a statement saying, it's an extremely joyful experience. It resulted in two new songs. And one of them, I Still Have Faith in You, will be performed by our digital selves in a TV special produced by NBC and the BBC and for broadcasting in December.
So will they themselves be going out on tour, the actual living entities?
No, not at all.
Huh.
But they have two new songs.
But the Killbots will be out.
And they're going to be digitally animated, which should be kind of interesting.
What if they do become self-aware and leap off the stage and start killing audience
members?
Well,
they're virtual. They're virtual.
Oh, they're virtual. Okay.
Yeah, they're not.
They're not robots.
They're not robots. But anyway, ABBA is a guilty pleasure.
Oh my God, yeah. They were a hit machine.
Yep, absolutely.
And I dug that song Frida. It was Frida that did with Phil Collins, right? Oh, I know there's something going on.
Yeah. What did Phil Collins do with that?
He played the drums and he sings
Does he sing on it?
Yeah.
Okay, nice. All right, and then finally, Free Music Monday. Got a chance for you to win Astro Creek 2000 Live, the new live album from Rob Zombie. We'll take caller number 12 at 215-263-WMMR. Your choice of CD or vinyl. So if you want vinyl, sure is, man.
You're a vinyl man now.
Out now from Universal Music Group. Don't miss Rob Zombie at the BB&T with Marilyn Manson August 9th as part of MMR's 50th birthday concert series. All right, so caller 12. We're going to give that to you. 215-263-WMMR. And that's music news. We're going to take a break. Come back in a second. Get ready to wrap this show up. Turn it over to Pierre. Because that man just does not work enough. We'll come back in a second. Stay with us.
MMR rocks. Enough said.
We're opening the pool today.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, so I'm opening up my cesspool.
Is it just the right time to get that that whole thing going? Hey, thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it. We also like to take a moment and thank our guest that we had in the studio. Fantastic director, has a movie called Tully that's coming out on Friday. Charlize Theron is in this. And, of course, he's done a lot of great movies like Up in the Air and Thank You for Smoking and Juno. So thanks to Jason Reitman.
Yeah, he was great.
He was great. It was wonderful to have him on the show this morning. So we were pretty stoked to get him back in and say hello and help promote his next project. Pierre Robert has made it back after an 11-hour shift yesterday, maybe even more than that. I'm not sure. You started at 10 a.m.
Yeah, we finished at 9 p.m.
At 9 p.m.?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So that's full on 11 hours. That's unbelievable. Yeah. I heard you. I caught you up until 7-ish, like 7:30. And I thought, this has got to be the end of it. So, no, sir.
Well, it had to go until it had to go.
Yeah.
And then it stopped.
I understand.
I was punching in and out throughout the day. It sounded great. It sounded like you were having a wonderful time.
It was really miraculous.
Yeah.
You know, it was more than I mean, I wasn't sure. It felt so overwhelming to take it on, you know, because what do you do for 50 years?
Yeah.
You know, but it just sort of evolved organically, you know, and it kind of developed. And then, you know, people started stopping by, like you.
Yeah.
Preston stopped by. It was so cool. I didn't expect it at all. And then a little bit later, Jackson stopped by.
Yeah.
And then Bam Bam came by. And Brent called in from the parking lot.
I heard Brent. I heard Jackson as well, and Sarah and Pancake. I heard Kevin. And I, you know what? This isn't about me. It's about the station. I wanted to stop by, but I almost felt like I didn't belong there. I was like, I don't know why. I just enjoyed listening so much that I was like, I didn't show up because I didn't want to make it about me at all. Does that make any sense at all?
I could understand why you would think that, but it doesn't make any sense because you're absolutely a vital part of the family. So you would have been absolutely welcome, and it would have been nice to have you. And it's fine that you didn't as well. You know, Bill Weston stopped by, you know, and Sarah and Pancake were just over the top amazing in their just indispensable help. But it was as it kept going, what you had said Friday, I wasn't necessarily expecting, Steve, but it really did become very emotional.
Yeah.
Very intense experience. And, you know, we could feel that bond between listeners, and a lot of people stayed through the whole 11 hours, God bless them. So it was pretty cool. And there is the team right there. There's Bill Weston, there's Pancake, there's Sarah,
there's
Kevin. We have
our members of the programming staff.
Yay!
Just came in this morning, and I think that round of applause is for you, Pierre.
No, it's...
It's your last day.
Yeah. I'd like to thank
you. That's how radio works, ladies and gentlemen.
Tomorrow, Joey Fartboy will be on the midday program.
No, generally goes, hey, nice show today. By the way, it was your last one. That's usually how the business goes. But Bill Weston is here at the mic.
I just wanted to say on behalf of the programming team, which is these six or seven people behind you that have worked a little bit on giving you like the 50 song list and some of the background. It's like a NASCAR driver.
Yeah.
You were behind the wheel yesterday. You drove an amazing race. But on behalf of the people that did a little bit, like Kevin's scripts and some of the production that we've done.
They did a lot.
You know, it was like we changed the tire. You know, we put some gas in the tank. But it was so amazing listening to you. I just wanted to bring the programming team in here to offer you our profound thanks on how you drove that car yesterday. It was an amazing broadcast.
Yeah.
I really felt so honored listening to 11 hours of this music and your thoughts and the listener involvement and pulling those air checks and the production and the stories and the social story that you were that Sarah was doing on behalf of the show and the arts. I was so, so proud. It was really a great day for the radio, and you pulled it off, my man. And you were on point for 11 hours. So, thank you. That was so, so good. Yeah, that was great.
I agree. I got a question, Pierre, because you're kind of like the historian here.
Him
and Kevin Gunn.
Yeah.
How many companies have owned this radio station?
Oh, Kevin, you have any idea?
211.
It started with Metro Media, and Metro Media was the company where the MM in MMR comes from.
Oh, that's right.
And they had seven stations around the country. Where I started in San Francisco at KSAN. In those days, companies could only, I think, have seven stations.
Yeah.
Bill would know better, at 1 a.m. and 1 FM in each town. They had KMET. They either worked the MET or MM into all of their stations if they could. They had KMET in Los Angeles. They had WMET in Chicago, WMMS in Cleveland, NEW, AM, and FM, legendary stations in New York, and MMR and WIP AM here, which then was a contemporary station, in contemporary meaning Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Sammy Davis Jr., that kind of stuff, with Ken Garland and Wee Willie Weber and Tom LeMaine and what was the other?
Dean Tyler was
Dean
one.
Tyler
Tom LeMaine was great.
And there was the other Tom.
Tom Moran.
Tom Moran. Oh, my God.
Cassius Clay.
He was right. Tom Moran was brilliant.
Well, the reason
I had like seven owners.
Seven owners?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, because Metro Media, it morphed into something called Metropolitan.
Then Liberty was like for like a cup of coffee. And then Westinghouse, then CBS, and then Greater Media. We were the best part was there was a year where we weren't owned by anybody.
What?
Wow. In 1996, when Bill Clinton deregularized
sure.
the FCC,
yeah.
the rules that went away, there was a rule that went away that said you can only have certain amounts of a demographic in one market.
Yeah.
So they bought YSP with CBS, and we were unowned for like a year.
Who paid you?
Who got all the money? Yeah.
Yeah, we were
Chuck's
Chuck
coming.
Knows.
We had shirts made that year that just said WMMR Incorporated. So it was it when CBS merged with Infinity?
Yeah.
Right.
And
they couldn't have that many stations. So they had to pay for everything we wanted to do, but they couldn't tell us how to do it.
Oh, that's great.
It was great. They still had to fund the radio station.
I wanted to say that each one of those owners deserves a little bit of credit because you hear time and time again a company coming in and buying a radio station, then they blow it up, they change a format or whatever without ever giving any thought. And I don't even care about the employees without ever giving any thought to the listeners, you know, the real family of this radio station, to the signal, to the fans, you know, and all that. So to have seven different owners come in here and keep the format. You know, it shows great respect to the city of Philadelphia.
Exactly. And that's the reason we've been able to do this for 50 years is because the passionate fans of this town have stuck with us. So even though we ran and hid from them on certain years, they still stuck with us, you know?
Meaning we made a lot of left and right musical turns that were sometimes confusing to them.
Yeah.
Our AAA format for a while, we were downtown. That was the You've Grown Up, We've Grown Up.
That was Bill. I know. We worked at Y100. We ran an ad campaign that said, "We've thrown up, you've thrown up."
Oh, really?
Yeah. We took out a print ad in the city paper or something like that.
It was a full page ad in the city paper and had a toilet on it. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. I saw it.
Yeah.
But they had.
Even we didn't like that. We thought that was bad for you guys.
They had the pink logo then.
Yeah.
And
Pepto Pink, we called it.
Pepto Pink. Yeah. And it was even on the van, and no one liked the logo. But they had a big unveiling of the logo at some club downtown, and it was this whole attempt that we're going to be more yuppie or something.
Right, sophisticated.
And then we threw up.
And then we threw up. But, you know, we played actually some very good music during that time, but a lot of, you know, milder, mellower art. Tracy Chapman.
Jewel.
Melissa Etheridge. We played Jewel. A lot of female artists. We played Sheryl Crow.
Yeah. I want to ask a quick question. Kevin, were you here before Pierre or the other way around?
I predated Pierre by about 3 months.
Okay.
But I was an intern at the time, and then Pierre arrived. I got here in June. He got here in, like, what, August? Yeah.
Okay.
Tell him the story. But he's been here throughout. I took a 7-year walkabout. I went in different places. I went to a couple different other places. So I haven't been here as, like, that long.
Right.
He's been here way longer than me.
Okay.
But I was here first.
Okay. I wasn't sure what you were.
Eric Simon, how long have you been here?
18 years.
Really? Todd DeFeo, how long have you been here?
18 years.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Mr. Shoes, how long?
And Chuck?
16 for Shoes.
Chuck?
Coming up on 24.
Wow.
Oh,
Pancake? Nine.
9 years for Pancake.
Also nine.
Sarah, wow. Nine. Pancake,
oh,
nine.
My God. You guys have been here for... it's amazing how quick this time goes.
But, I
by.
Mean, Pancake and Sarah are both young, and they're both veterans.
Yeah.
They both have got the spirit of what this place is all about. You know, they're like Star Trek The Next Generation. You know, they're like Jean-Luc Picard.
Mm-hmm.
And the
late... Geordi LaForge.
Yeah.
And Data.
Marissa Magnata, how long have you been here?
Marissa predates the Preston and Steve show. How long have you been here?
14 years.
Wow.
And you guys are 13?
13, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean...
Tomorrow? Wait.
Bill, how long have you been here?
May 5th, right?
May 5th. Bill Weston?
14.
Okay. So, it's a pretty amazing thing.
I posted yesterday. We've had the opportunity to walk in the trails blazed by guys like Tiersen and Shockey and David Dye and everything. And that's been an amazing privilege. But to see young talent come along and pick up the gauntlet and run with us and make this... worth their incredible while, like Marissa and Sarah and Chris and all the young guys around here.
Chris?
That's Pancake.
Oh, sorry, Pancake.
Your producer's name is Chris.
I didn't get pancakes that day. I never got a pancake that day, so I call him Chris. But to watch the young talent come along and say that this is worthy, this is worth their while and everything, it's been most flattering for me personally.
Wow, that's awesome. It's a big event. It's so cool. And yesterday was great. A lot of people actually are texting in right now wanting to know if there would ever be a podcast of that show. It's an awful lot to take on. I have no idea if any of that's archived or not.
Well, we have it all on tape, but I mean, I don't know how we would.
Yeah.
You could parse out, do sort of a best. Ever just, if they, just wait.
Whatever you call it. Computer. By the way, do you guys have an extra Yanni? I forgot mine.
What happened to your Yanni?
I left him at home. And,
that's Pierre Yeti? Saying a Yeti cup
and,
is
and,
his Yanni.
And both you of my coffees have gotten.
Chili.
They've gotten, what do you call those things? Floaties?
Chili?
Floaties.
Oh. Floaties.
Floaties. Mm.
Both my coffees got floaties, so I have to get new coffee, but I need a Yanni. That's side point.
We'll look for a Yanni for you.
Thank you.
Anyhow, congratulations. Great job yesterday. It was really cool to listen to, and we're all insanely proud to work here. So.
No, it was joyous.
Chuck.
Robin Lee and Bill Weston have been working on a photo gallery that's up on the website.
Ah.
About how many photos in there over the history of the radio station? 300 shots.
Wow. Oh, nice.
Some we may or may not own.
No, we own all of them.
I had brown hair.
All right, cool. Yes, you want to check those out and also get the retro gear, the vintage MMR t-shirt. Shirts, which I got to get that very first logo. I like that most of all.
Great job by Eric Simon on those.
It's fantastic.
It's such a cool eye. And the, you know, with credit to Beasley, the first shirt actually says Metro Media Stereo.
No kidding.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously Metro Media isn't even a company anymore, I don't believe. But most of all, you know, thanks to the listeners who, you know, as Kevin said, have been with us through all these left turns and ups and downs and lefts and rights and those who've, you know, joined along the way. It's a pretty amazing journey. And it was very emotional as it got later and later. It was hard to get through the last couple of the breaks.
It sounded great.
It was very inspiring. And then Pancake and Sarah and I were going... Now what do we do?
Yeah.
9 o'clock.
Yep.
So we broke out a bottle of Jameson and had a shot.
Nice.
That was nice.
Good call.
Start preparing for the 100th birthday.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. We got to start now.
Well, it's 50 years in one day, so
we're doing again.
We're continuing on. Nice. Thanks, Kevin, everybody.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
You got us off to a great start.
Thank you guys for all coming in. That's so cool.
All right, we got to do the letter. You ready, my man?
Sure.
Here we go. Let me do this.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
Now, the Daily Letter.
All right, the Preston and Steve Show is brought to you today by the letter. Oh, sorry. Your mic's not on. Try now.
S as in Let's start it up again.
All right, I like it. S, letter S, and we have a WMMR 50th birthday prize pack. And that's a pair of tickets, MMRBQ 2018. Free admission for MMR's Mother's Day. A four-pack of tickets to Pierre Presents, Nathaniel Rateliff, and the Night Sweats. A four-pack of tickets to the MMR Birthday Beer Bash. Cheers to 50 years. And $100 to spend in the WMMR Rock Shop. Complete details for all of these events can be found at WMMR.com. So, very cool prize, which we will give away on Friday. What's in store after all that yesterday?
Come on, man.
What's in store for today, sir?
I don't know. we're gonna have the free Music Monday stuff to give away. We've got birthday bucks at 11 and 1. We have... from the vaults of the archives, a really cool thing from the Bijou Cafe. Joe Jackson, Is She Really Going Out with Him? And that's from 1979.
I love Joe Jackson.
Amazing.
Seen him in concert many times.
Bill loves him, too.
Yeah.
And we also will get to some Workforce Blocks. You, too. We've got the Killers in store for you. We've got the Police. And if we can get the audio, I have some audio from Friday night at the Philly Pops with that gigantic 40-piece orchestra. And Michael Krajewski, the conductor, was kind enough to give us a shout-out and say how cool it was because they're doing all this Led Zeppelin music. You know, they did Stairway to Heaven just magnificently, symphonically, and they did all these great rock songs done orchestrally, and he gave us a nice shout out, and so we have a couple clips from that.
The treatment that they give those songs is so cool.
Yeah. Just amazing.
It is so cool.
Amazing. So
excellent. All right. Thank you, Pierre. I got to thank our sponsors. Program today brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts, the official coffee of the Preston and Steve Show. The Preston and Steve Show runs on Dunkin'. Also brought to you by Primo Hoagies, May 5th, National Hoagie Day. Celebrate with the best tasting hoagies in the entire Delaware Valley. And also brought to you by Wilmington University. Experience the Wilmington University difference at wilmu.edu. Tomorrow, the return of Not Your Average Listener.
Yeah.
Have someone in with an interesting story to tell about themselves. We'll find out what that is tomorrow. It's a Tuesday, so we'll hand out some free ink with Tattoos Day, and I'm sure we'll have some stuff to give to you on top of that. That's it. We are done. So rage on and have a great day, and we will see you tomorrow, gang. Bye-bye.
The Preston and Steve Love You, Hate You Live.
You know when you get introduced to somebody, and the only thing they have to say about the person is, oh, yeah, she's real nice. Yeah, that's code for this person sucks. Because if that's the only thing they have to say about them, then they blow.
Next message.
I am so excited to be part of the Philly Pops Festival Chorus. And I'm so excited that Pierre is going to be there for our pre-show talk. WMMR rocks, Philly rocks. Philly Pop rocks. Woo!
Next message.
This call's for my husband, who takes a shower in the morning, doesn't leave the any soap. Is he the only one who thinks he has to wash his ass?
The Preston and Steve Love You, Hate You line.
Call 484-434-1333.
MMR rocks.
Brought to you by DellToyota.com and DellChevrolet.com.
Jack, sell them for less.